Blog Talk Radio.
First World Order Radio, finally, we are on the air, no doubt. All right. There's always going to be somebody in the building on First World Order Radio. We get on into some of that order consciousness tonight. First World Order Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. We got to talk about what is taking place on the planet. There's always going to be somebody in the building on First World Order Radio. First, we need to let you know we're going to be doing more shows, giving out more information on Wednesdays. Wednesday at 8 o'clock, we are now going to make this week the hottest day of the week.
Preceding others in time, order, and importance. The most prominent parts, voices, or instruments. Earthly state of human concerns and existence. An indefinite multitude, quantity, or distance. System regulates to bring about specifics in the group based on value and natural characteristics. Current radiates electromagnetics of sound through the air, same as your thoughts transmits it. Preceding others in time, order, and importance. The most prominent parts, voices, or instruments. Earthly state of human concerns and existence. An indefinite multitude, quantity, or distance. Order. System regulates to bring about specifics in the group based on value and natural characteristics. Radio. Current radiates electromagnetics of sound through the air, same as your thoughts transmits it.
You need to understand how magical this, something like this every Wednesday can become. So you need to start getting your calendar right, get your schedule right. You need to know our intention straight out.
Alright, so, I mean, these clues are given throughout the various languages was to piece the puzzle of this ancient mystery school back together again.
And what we plan on doing, both of us, is bringing y'all some surefire dynamite. We're going to take this level up a notch. We're going to have stuff to do here. This is not just going to be about philosophies and theories. Shit that works.
You have activated pilot land in which I produced this black chemical called melanin.
What we did was gave a hard line in the sand between the different definitions of esoteric study and exoteric study. Playtime is over.
But for the battles I've come, cause I'm Keep the light shining, so as my mic illuminates, you can feel the shape that I'm in. thoroughly immersed in a verse way more than hardcore. I endure, cause in myself I'm secure, delivering syllables and selections with profound perfection, coming back like the resurrection. In this session I'm professing that those who don't hear and understand never loved me, and so I plan to take a stand as one who is firmly focused. Plus I'm mad worthy with words. I rock from East New York all the way to the suburbs, the light keeper, knowledge seeker. I switch the stresses on my mind into the voice that rocks your speaker, and I get deeper than the ocean when I'm with jazz, feel my need to express myself like the blues I can't lose. Weak MCs, they're seeking refuge from my barrage, there's no rescue. Then I look through the madness, finding sanity. I'm crazy alert, I never swim in vanity. I do this rap stuff every year. Ayo, peace to my fam, especially my man Premier, as I'm looking out to the wilderness.
You back once again with First World Radio, your host, Dr. Aleem Bey, as well as also my co-host, Brother Fahim L. Are you here, brother?
I tell you, Washington East.
Hey, Dr. I tell you, Washington East, Jack. How you doing?
Doing well, brother. Well, brother. How the brother doing?
I'm doing good, God.
All right. Fantastic.
We got a good show for y'all tonight. We're bringing Brother Panic back, but we're going to flip the script a little bit, and he's going to be asking me questions. So, Brother Panic, are you here, God?
Yes, indeed. Can you hear me, Brother Aleem?
Yeah, we got you loud and clear, God.
Yeah, loud and clear, brother.
All right. Brother L, how did we go over there, brother?
Fantastic, brother. How the brother
good
doing?
Good almighty. Haven't heard from you in a while. It's good to be back on the radio. Going to flip the script tonight, as Dr. Aleem said. And after Dr. Aleem does his intros, I'll be ready to get it on because I got a list of questions here that we're going to go through. So if you're ready, I'm ready, brother.
Yeah, we ready to get into it. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. Lean comes prepared. That's when you know you're dealing with a real master teacher.
Oh,
niggas,
yeah.
Niggas prepared. You don't need no opening speeches or nothing. That's when you know you're dealing with the real deal, McCoy. Mm-hmm. We're going to get it on. First, I want to say a couple of things about Aleem. First and foremost, y'all need to really, really understand, even though I come on the show and run my mouth to death, Aleem was actually my teacher, which for him to be as quiet as he is when he hears someone who was following him talk as much and still sit patiently, to me, is amazing within itself. Because let's say Bobby was hosting the show, y'all wouldn't hear shit from me. You know what I'm saying? Now, I wouldn't be able to get a word in edgewise. So just that patience that Aleem has is masterful within itself. And when I tell you, first, let me say this as well. If you don't know who Dr. Aleem is, you're not doing shit. You know what I'm saying? He's been around quite a long time. This is about maybe 10 to 11 years ago when I first actually met him, and I maybe a year or two I was listening to his work before then. So around 2004 is when I actually first met him. And we're talking about this is some impressive shit. When the brother came through the lecture, he came through the lecture for Eye Opener, and I knew it was serious business because while the guy who was opening for him, Aline had about fucking three stories worth of papers stacked up to straighten this ruffled shit out to get into this lecture. And what I found out then, which if you were to go to his website or wherever to get some of those tapes he's done in the early 2000s, in mid 2000s, Aline was one of the hardest to break down, which we're going to get into some of these questions tonight, the hardest to break down this Bible, Quran, and any of these religious things and place them back on their metaphysical, I guess you say balance, if you want to go there.
Right. But
he took all the metaphysics that was extracted out of the shit that y'all still trying to make heads or tails out, complaining about how much you hate Jesus and all the rest of the things that we as conscious people usually do. What Aline does to a masterful level, I've never seen no one in this community do it as masterful as Brother Aline, take all of those stories that you've heard throughout these years and insert the metaphysical science and the occult science back in it. So if you're not aware of Aline's work, you need to get your ass in gear and start getting with Aline. Go to DrAlineLBay.com, and you can find, I'm sure, plenty of information to connect you with more of this very valuable information, because one of the things we had to on anybody's conscious path is actually getting over this hate that you have for the religion that you were brought through. And you get over that hate, and as Dr. Aline and I were talking about, when you start to understand actually what it means. So In the beginning, of course, I was like, fuck that white Jesus and all the rest of that. But when I started to study and understand what the Christ energy meant, that white Jesus became irrelevant. You get what I'm saying? As an emotional, as something I should feel emotional about even. So the key is once you understand that religion, you actually start to defeat it. Because you will not deny that even if your mama and father didn't go to church, one of your grandparents dragged your ass there. So no matter how much you hate Jesus, it's still entrenched in you. That's why you still have an emotion called hate of Jesus, because you are still connected to your religious upbringing. So the path to that is actually understanding what these symbols mean, this allegory, what it means, and what they're talking about. Aline is the best at doing that. And that's what we're going to do tonight. And believe you me, I'm not even getting into the power and depth of this man's knowledge. You get what I'm saying? Like I said, I'm going to say it again. I find it amazing that he can be quiet half the time when I'm talking because of all the shit that he does know. So why we decided to do this is because Brother Aline, you know, he was in Atlanta, he did a lecture, and I went to the lecture off the hook, of course, plenty of information, breakthrough information for me, of course, and I'm sure it would be for anybody else. He always puts the shit in a proper perspective, and as always, if him and his queen is in Atlanta, you know they come to our house to chip. So, of course, we invited the brother and sister over, which is always a pleasure. It's some of the greatest times we spent when Aline and his queen comes over. Of course, me and Aline is just bullshitting, staying up to like 7 a.m., regular comedic nigga shit, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Ain't about nothing, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, and I want to thank his queen. She hooked me up quite well, put me in the process, started the seeds for the website, which now I can say that instead of, well, I'm still going to say email panicpack@hotmail.com. You know, I'm used to that song. But you could also now go to occultlectures.com. And I'm going to be selling product there. You'll be able to see what up. I'm still building that site. But just like my YouTube is YouTube, Occult Lectures, and you're used to that. Now the website is occultlectures.com. So y'all can go there, and like I said, I'll talk about that more in the future. And I want to thank Aline's Queen for hooking me up. When I tell you she's a genius within herself, she's a genius within herself.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get into Q&A, the one thing I do have to say is one of the things I've trained myself to do is any room that I walk in, I can feel the weight of the spirits inside that room, heavy, negative, and primarily from people's thought forms. So if I go into a office or I walk into a hospital, I can feel the actual weight. And most people feel it when they go into the hospital because there's so much of it. But in almost in any room, when I tell you this shit, and I mean this shit, and I haven't told Aline yet, after Aline left our guest room, the fucking room was so spiritually clean.
Mm.
I don't think I felt that shit in my house out of all the shit I've done. It was fucking lighter in that room than when we gave it to the nigga. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, God damn. You know what I'm saying? I just wanted to take off my clothes and go to sleep. It was just so, that's just how peaceful it is. You know what I'm saying? And what that tells me, which when you, if you ever to meet Aline, like, you can even see him or his queen with one hateful thought. It's like you could feel that they don't operate like that. And so going into that room, it was clear, because I'm going to find out from anybody what's really going on. And it's not necessarily hate towards me. It's just if something heavy weighs on their mind. You could they ain't got shit that's weighing on their mind. It's like this shit is like amazing when I went in that room after those spirits. So I've seen all of this so y'all know. If y'all don't know already, this is some real deal guy. Y'all need to reach out to him and anything that y'all can either receive for him, work with him on, or whatever. Like, y'all dealing with a real motherfucker, not just an internet phenomenon. You get what I'm saying? This is some real teacher shit, and I think it's important for anybody on their path to try to see what he has to offer. One of the things he does offer is that class, and you need to get with him to see how that works. And I believe he does have a whole list of people on his website that give testimony to them after they take the class. I know Michael Pratt took the class, and he can't stop talking about it. It is absolutely worth it. They have a payment plan. I believe it's over 4 months. I'm sure Aline will be happy to talk about it. But if you're serious about your shit, this is the type of shit you do. These are the motherfuckers you want to surround yourself with, because I am absolutely clear, as I'm clear about myself, I am clear about Aline, that he came to this planet to do exactly this. This is not a hobby or something he does on the week. This is one of the ones that came back to teach your black ass. Take advantage if you're in the air shot. All right, so now that I did all the nipple rubbing I could possibly do, we're going to get into these Q&A. And believe you me, I do not speak for this lightly. Y'all need to get with him. This motherfucker's a genius. I went to that fucking lecture in Atlanta he just did. Your mouth would drop at all the symbolism this dude can break down, which we're gonna get a taste of tonight. All right. So finally, we're gonna get to these Q&A questions. Now that the Negroes are in the room and we're all ready. All right. So let's go start getting down to it. All right, so the first question I have for Dr. Aline is something that I notice in the black community, and I would like him to break down the differences. And what I notice is most conscious people, and they have this mentality that just because we're black, you know, we're better. And I just want you to point out if, do you think, or could you lead us to understand, is there some work we have to do to actually realize that power besides just saying, well, we're black and we have melanin? Are there things we could do to enhance it or activate it?
Well, yeah, no doubt. Melanin is what we can call black energy, dark matter, personified. I call it melanin is the physical counterpart to the spiritual soul.
Mm-hmm.
But melanin has to be cleansed, and how you do that is through vitamin B2, B6, B12. On a daily basis, so that means eating a lot of green leafy vegetables, because there's only one difference between melanin and chlorophyll, and that's one magnesium molecule.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be definitely eating some spinach, some kale, some broccoli, whatever else it is that is green leafy, you know, on a daily basis. Once you learn how to do that, then you have to learn how to harness energy, which that we spoke about before. There's three areas in your body where you actually store energy at. The first is your dantian, lower dantian, which is called your navel chakra. The second is your heart chakra. The third is your third eye. So if you want longevity, a healthy life, then you store energy in your belly button or your navel. If you want compassion, mercy, love, then you store it in your heart. If you want intelligence, high IQ, genius, you store it in your third eye. So those are the three places that you store and harness energy at. So you want to learn how to do what is called a microcosmic and a macrocosmic orbit technique and circulate the energy through your body for regenerative purposes, as well as also being able to transmit that energy through your body, out your arms, into your hands, into another individual. When you do that, I would suggest that you don't use your own personal energy, but you will use the cosmic energy, so you will visualize gold energy coming down at the crown chakra, flowing through the head, down into the throat, into the heart, and then out through the arms and through the hands. And once you learn how to master that, then you can transmit the heavenly energy through your physical vessel. That's the real meaning of melanin. I mean, that's the real reason why we have melanin, because, I mean, melanin, the melanocytes act as black holes, so it's the natural thing to do is to absorb energy.
Absorb energy. So if I, so the new person getting into it, who wasn't aren't aware of their melanin, you say like the first step is to become aware of it. They have to at least do something to feed it or cleansing it to be basically like feed it and acknowledge it would be like a first step for someone.
Right, and also another thing in which that is real good is what is called star or sun gazing. The energy pierce the eyes, the iris, it hits the optic nerve, the energy channels down through the brain into the other endocrine glands, and actually after 9 months of doing that, there is no dis-ease in the body. This is being tested scientifically and medically that disease do not exist once you learn how to start a sun gaze. But the same thing is true that as you're using the sun, you also have to use the science of breath simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So one is dealing with the science of pranayama, which is what we call cosmic energy, cultivating energy, and the other is dealing with the science of breath, which is actually the science of spirit. And so once you connect these two, the breath acts as a medium between the cosmic energies and the physical body itself. So the breath shows you how to tap into the different layers of consciousness just by simply slowing your breath down and making your breath deeper and longer. And that causes you to go into a different state of consciousness each time. Psychologically, it's called the gamma state, beta state, alpha state, delta state, delta state, and delta theta state. So those are what is called the five states of consciousness in psychology.
Okay, we're gonna let's do it this, because you are dropping a lot of advanced information.
Yeah.
So I want to with basically on the stuff that you said so far, let's go into it a little bit to dissect it. So the new person can bridge themselves, or at least know where to go. So in other words, because some of these things I can see they're going to have to learn from your class. Some of these things you're going to be able to tell them, well, this is what you go home and do. So far we talked about three sections. So I don't want to skip over and confuse new people, because I'm finding a lot of new people are listening to our show as opposed to some old pros. So I want to start where you started from when you said cleansing the melanin. Because usually that's usually the first, that what I can see is the first step for anyone who's trying to get into it. So if I've never heard any of what you said before, which a lot of people haven't, I would say, well, how do I cleanse my melanin? And you said there was some B vitamins and kale. So just from the section of cleansing my melanin, what result would I get or should I look for to be able to go to the next step, which I'm going to say would be the breathing techniques? So what
okay.
would you, after doing it, what would you notice after I got into some of the B vitamins? And, you know, what could I say to myself when I look in the mirror and say, now I feel my melanin is cleansed because?
Okay, let me explain this to you. Vitamins, in order to be activated, have a catalyst called minerals. The particular mm-hmm. minerals on which they act as a catalyst, vitamin B, vitamin E, vitamin A, and vitamin D. In that particular, well, those particular vitamins also along with the vitamin Bs. But you mm-hmm. have selenium, magnesium, as well as also manganese, all right? Mm-hmm. All the minerals that correlates to those particular vitamins. Now, mm-hmm. water is also essential, you know, alkaline water, at least water in which that is like 7.4 pH balance. pH means power hydrogen. That means mm-hmm. How much power is in that water. You know, H2O. You have hydrogen, two-part oxygen. It tells you how much that hydrogen is, the power of it. And so if it's like 7.4, that is about the same as your blood and your plasma in your body. So the mm-hmm. water helps with the cleansing process. Sun helps with the cleansing process because the sun has been known to be able to destroy viruses, bacteria, and ultraviolet rays in particular, cancer.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that means that it destroys parasites, worms, microbial bacteria, and everything else. So the sun can also help in that process. So when mm-hmm. your body is cleansed, and how you notice, because you'll start to tingle in certain areas, whether it's at the top of the head, the third eye, whether it's your hands or whether it's the soles of your feet, what's called the bubbling springs, you begin to start tingling. And that is actually showing that your body is now able to absorb energy or different forms of frequencies of energy. All right.
So cleansing melanin prepared me to be able to receive different forms of energy, higher frequency, which is basically just spiritual information, ancient information, or basically the information that you're seeking. So with cleansing melanin, you're saying it's the first step in preparing you to even be a receiver of information.
Right.
So that's why it's important to cleanse the melanin.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
There's
also particular areas in the brain in which that we know that mm-hmm. we heard of fluoride water calcifying the pineal gland. We heard of GMO food, hardening the arteries and causing plaque to build up within the arteries and the capillaries, in which that causes one to become obese, as well as also mm-hmm. it's messed with the testosterone within the males and the estrogen within the women, causing them to get out of shape and hormonally out of balance. So we understand mm-hmm. what the GMO food is doing. So everything that we talked about help counteract that. These certain herbs that can also be used, such as kelp, corella, alfalfa, dandelion, wheatgrass. Those particular ones have high amounts of chlorophyll. Like you said, remember chlorophyll and melanin is only one magnesium difference. Otherwise, the structure of them are identical.
Okay. Lynn, do you have a better mic or something? Or could angle your mic? You're a little bit blurry. I can hear you, but you're a little bit blurry. But, you know, see if you can get it a little bit clearer.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
Much better. Okay. So So now, okay, now the second portion you talked about was the importance of the breath in melanin. So now let's say I'm at that point where I feel my melanin is cleansed. What's my purpose, or what would be the purpose of me dealing with the breath, and why is that important?
Well, what we found out is that, according to scientists, quantum physicists, that 300,000 tons of stardust energy falls to the planet Earth daily.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists have stated that 90% of our physical anatomy is actually stardust. So
okay.
Actually, all a star. So that means if there's 300,000 tons of stardust energy falling to a planet, to people who is 90% made of stardust, that would mean that melanin actually acts as a bridge way for us to absorb that 300,000 tons of stardust energy into that 90%.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, to resonate us to a 100% level of operation. So that means you have to work at it. You know, in order to, of course, bridge that point, but it's through the melanin, which acts as a medium, just like your breath acts as a medium as it extracts what is called pranic or chi energy from the oxygen. You know?
Okay, that makes sense. So through the breathing techniques, you're saying that we can access this stardust, which is, I guess we can look at the stardust as a form of information, or is it more of a catalyst for alchemy, or that would inspire change in the DNA. But what's the primary? What would be the primary reason, I guess, we would want to breathe in stardust?
Right. Well, what we notice is that scientists have stated that we are only able to visibly see 10% of the universe. The other 90% is dark matter, black energy. Scientists also say that we're only able to use 10% of our DNA. The other 90% goes unused. Right? Scientists also say that we only use 10% of our brain. The other 90% of that goes unused. So we can keep going on and on about how we are not using the totality of our existence. We're not seeing we're not being what we can be. We are only a small smidgen, a 10% smidgen of who we actually are.
Right.
In other words, we only, you know, we only live in 10%. You know, the other 90%, would be a whole lot different. And when people talk about these particular gifts, miracles, healing, discerning spirits, communicating with spirits, or astral projection, clairvoyance, clear audience, clear guessing, psychic chemistry, telekinesis, telepathic. All of these gifts comes from you activating the dormant portion of yourself, which that we're talking about. And the only way to do that is by adding more stardust to the stardust body.
The stardust will help to nourish that portion that we're trying to tap in, which is basically the magical portion or the metaphysical portion, or all of those ancient stories we heard about the ancient black man and black woman, the stuff that they were just dealing with on a daily basis, which is not really magic. It was normal for them. So the importance of learning breathing techniques, which I know you teach, because when you came, you did a few and taught me a few. So I know you teach this. The proper way to breathe, the techniques to breathe. You showed we did some of the exercise in your lecture. So all of this basically helps to get the stardust in your system to uplift your consciousness. That's you're saying that's that important. And basically, to cleanse melanin. Cleanse melanin is a bridge that helps that stardust basically be processed in the body, in the mind, and all of that.
Well, the stardust is the English equivalent to the Sanskrit word prana. It is
prana.
The equivalent to the Chinese word qi. It is the Japanese equivalent to the word ki. It is the Hawaiian connection or a word, what is called kahuna mana. Matter of fact, biblically, the Bible tells you about mana in which that fell from heaven. It is no coincidence that the word kahuna mana, you know, is the word within Hawaiian, which that means the same as heavenly energy, celestial.
Right.
You know, biblically, that would be what we call the Holy Spirit or the Holy Ghost.
So there's a lot of reference, and we can get into some about the importance of the breath in the Bible. And we're gonna talk about some of the things that you decoded as we go on in the show, because I have them later on in the question list. We want to at least save some, you know, for that. We want to save some punches for the end, because we still have the question one. All right, because I know you do speak. We're gonna get a chance to speak thoroughly about breath in the Bible when we get up to that portion. Okay, and the other thing that you added on with this one question, the next thing, you talked about the importance of sun worship or absorbing sun. So now this takes us to, you cleanse the melanin, and then with the breathing techniques, you energize your body with stardust. How does the sun now fit into the scenario?
Right. Well, the sun, of course, is a star, and so hence, that star was formed, like we said in the lecture, from the implosion of Sirius B. When we look at Sirius B, we see that there was a release of energy, and that energy in which that was released formed our sun, in which that formed our planet in this particular solar system. So actually, we are Sirius B. There's no doubt about that, because the same dust in which that was there, and Sirius B is the same dust in which that is still regulating now this particular experience of ours. But it's still, if you look at the way in which that the Earth and our solar system sit downwind or downward from Sirius A and Sirius B, you would see that we travel around each other elliptically every 25,920 years. And as we go around each other, we're also going through the 12 zodiac signs, which is every 25,920 years. So there's a perfect elliptical pattern and circular pattern in which that is taking place here, in which that we call it revolution and evolution. You know, but really, you know, everything in which that we, you know, refer to that as, those particular concepts, is actually the mind operating in different spheres of states of consciousness.
Okay.
You know, that goes back to the book by Michael Talbot, The Holographic Universe.
Okay. So so dealing with the sun, are you tapping, you're enhancing that or tapping into that level of consciousness?
Right. Well, because you're tapping into that's why we was called sun worshippers for, you know, pagans or heathens, you know, for hundreds and thousands of years by the Europeans, because they did not understand, nor could they you know, handle the frequencies of the sun. Within our particular yoga system, you know, whether it's Egyptian yoga, whether it was Hindu yoga, whether it was Buddhist or, you know, Taoist, you know, or Tibetan, these yoga, which the word yoga just simply means union, meaning of lower self and higher self, become one self, which is, you know, essentially the higher self is, you know, so the sun itself helps with us tapping into our full potential. It helps change the DNA. Children now are being born with not just two strands of DNA, but three strands of DNA, and we are developing to a 12-strand DNA being, 12 physically and 12 etherically, which is actually 24 strands. And so this is taking place right now, and there's actually many people on the planet who actually have 12 strands of DNA.
Interesting. Now, I've seen in your lecture you showing, which I noticed, but until you broke down the symbology, it became absolutely clear. A lot of stuff you did with Akhenaten's stellar reliefs and I guess you could tell us just a little bit about those hieroglyphs and what you decoded in those, with the, in terms of how it fit with sun worship.
Right. Well, what we were talking about, that this solar activity and its effect on the earth. Right now we're going through what is called Solar 24, with these solar flare eruptions in which that is taking place, in which that billions of tons of super hot gas containing charged particles are bombarding the planet Earth and being drawn through the poles. So we know we have the North Pole, the South Pole, which is called the, you know, Northern and Southern Light, or the Aurora Borealis, which collide, which actually collide with the atmosphere, causing polar light. Now, that means as this energy is coming in, we ourselves are also taking in these charged particles. And it's a known fact that if you get the book, The Unk, I think Brother Heru, he's the wife, he's the husband of Queen Afua. He wrote the introduction for that book, The Unk. And Der Unk Amen, he states in there that melanin is always able to take a charge. But in the third dimension, there's an energy gap in between in the melanin. Now, if there's an energy gap in the melanin, and the melanin is always able to take a charge, what is it being charged with? It's being charged with these star dust particles that we're talking about, this super hot gas. You know, so the ancients knew this, and so you can see Akhenaten with his wife Nefertiti and their children outside in front of Aten, and the rays of the sun is coming down like hands. Hands symbolizes the ability in order to heal, because there's 29 compartments in the brain dedicated to the hands alone. All right? And so you would see and count actually 29 rays coming down from the sun, in which is being shown upon Akhenaten, his wife, and Unk-Anten, his wife Nefertiti, and their two children. All right?
Right.
So this is important to the fact that these 29 compartments in the brain are being activated, you know, by the sun. And once you start realizing, you know, the correlation that the ancient Egyptians or Kemites or, you know, Tumerians had with nature, they was already the practitioners of what we would call now Qigong or Tai Chi. It's a known fact that Bodhidharma, you know, left from outer, he was from the Tamil people, which is actually the followers of Atun Re. And he left from out of India, all right? He would be called what is called the Sudra people, in other words, the Untouchables now, because he was so dark-skinned, right? But he left out of India, and he traveled into China to what we would call, you know, the Shaolin warriors. And when he went to Shaolin, those there, the Shaolin priests, many of them would fall asleep during meditation. So he would teach them movement meditation, in which that became known as the Eightfold Dohan style, which is actually the beginning stages of what we call Qigong, Tai Chi. And he began to teach them movement meditation. And so in essence, he taught them how to be a sun worshiper. And this is actually demigrated melanin people from being sun worshipers, because they knew that this is the connection between our melanin and the sun. Now, it's no coincidence that nowadays scientists are saying that, well, you know, black people need at least 1 to 3 hours of sunlight a day. All of a sudden, they're telling us now to be back to being the sun worshipers now.
When they were saying we need to get our asses out the sun.
Yes.
Exactly. That's now they're saying that we need to get out the sun, but now all of a sudden they say, well, the vitamin D in your body operate to its fullest extent, and it don't become absorbed, you know, as you know, as a hormone into the bloodstream until you have at least 1 to 3 hours of sunlight a day. Now that's miraculous, because like you said before, you say stay our ass without the sun. You need you need sunblock. You need sunscreen.
I remember. They said even black people need sunscreen.
That's what they was telling us.
So now they're saying we need to get back in the sun.
We're supposed to be solar people, and we don't get enough sun.
I remember someone saying, but now it makes sense after hearing you say this, Aleem, that we need to be black people being in the sun actually absorbs energy, because without us being in the sun,
exactly,
and not absorbing the energy, it actually fucks white people up. So,
exactly.
So I remember some lecturers are saying, but they didn't say for they didn't go into the detail that you just broke down. They went into just we need to be there because we need to absorb it for, you know, the melanin, otherwise it stays in the atmosphere and could tear their asses up. So we need to be. So, but I see now, even if that lecturer didn't know all this detail, I can see where that's what he meant. That's what he means. We need to absorb this energy because it's here for us.
Right.
It makes so much sense. Makes so much
right.
sense.
And that's why I correlated Psalms 84:11, where it says, "For the Lord God is a sun and a shield."
Mm. Mm.
The Lord would give mm-hmm. grace and glory. No good thing would be withheld from that. Walketh uprightly. So here it is. It's saying that if you walk uprightly, and then
mm-hmm.
saying that God is a sun, and then you have a shield, all of this is correlated right there within Psalms 84, you know, 11. You know,
mm-hmm.
the shield is your melanin.
Shield the melanin.
Is
okay.
What,
right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the sun itself is what deals with the center forth of that, what it says, that walk of uprightly. That's what giving you the ability to have that grace and that glory, you know,
mm-hmm.
as it is saying.
Right.
And how we know that, because I gave an example how ancient people worshiped the sun, built pyramids, you know, for free energy and had a lifespan of 1,000 years plus. But moderate
mm-hmm.
people are smarter, at least they assumed it to be, and that is
mm-hmm.
why they worship a man, you know, a white man, particularly if he's melanated, that they never met. Pollute the very water
mm-hmm.
that they have to drink with fluoride, the air that they breathe, you know, with chemtrails, and eat GMO
mm-hmm.
foods. And they die very young as a result
mm-hmm.
of having no respect for them. So who I'm going to follow? The ancient?
You're right, right.
Or those who get ready to be the ancient?
Right, right.
Right.
Those who are about to be the ancient. All
right. Right, right.
Very detailed, very detailed. Okay, very detailed, very good information. And I do understand. And I'm sure that people starting out should understand that. And for the breathing techniques, I believe Aline teaches this in his class, so y'all need to get on it. You know what I'm saying? Get on it. And he also teaches you technique, and I know he talked about it in the lecture, how to receive the sun, which is real interesting, real interesting. All right, I have another question, Aline, that semi changes the subject a bit. I want to deal with the heart versus the brain. You know, we hear that the heart is the center of consciousness, the brain is the center of ego. So spiritually, metaphysically, occultly, let's talk about some things in the heart versus the brain, how to energize the heart, open up the heart chakra. Are there things and portions in the brain that matter more than that gray matter? You know, so people be clear on how to focus their energy and what they're focusing in these places for.
Right. Well, when we look at the scale of balance of Mayat, you know, everyone
mm-hmm.
want to talk about it, but I never heard anyone decode it properly. But
right.
here it is on the scale. The heart is balanced against the feather. All right, that's a beautiful
mm-hmm.
thing, and everybody can see that, and that's what we've been told, but let's go a little bit further with it. We know that the heart is the middle point between the seven chakras. It's the midway point.
Mm-hmm.
You got the three
right.
lower chakras, then the heart, and then the three higher chakras. So the heart
mm-hmm.
is the midpoint. So it's talking about the convergence of earthly energy and heavenly energy converging upon the heart, and therefore the heart being weighed. You know, in other words, if the good overweighs the bad deeds, then the heart is lighter than the feather. However, if the bad deeds overweigh the good deeds, now, of course, this is all metaphysical. This is metaphor. We're talking about in the sense
mm-hmm.
of people's attachments to the earthly plane. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, if they have certain addictions, you know, they have, you know, eating addiction, drinking addiction, you know, drug addiction,
mm-hmm.
whatever the case is, they have these addictions and they care more about that than their physical self and their spiritual self, then more than likely there's going to be accumulation of these attachments at the heart. So
right.
that's why you have the canopic jaws in which that For example, the heart is saved. You know, the brain, you know, they don't worry about the brain. The brain is just a receiver, you know, and a transmitter, you know, for the mind. The mind goes into the accumulation of the heart because it is the building up aspect of the heavenly force and the earthly force all in one. So when the heart is weighed against the scale, and plus another thing in which that was important is that a person who incarnates or will no longer have to incarnate depends on the matters of the heart. For example, if the kundalini is trapped below the heart chakra into the solar plexus, into the navel chakra, into the root chakra, base chakra, as it's called, then a person will have to reincarnate again because they did not raise the kundalini energy above the heart chakra in order to make it lighter than a feather. All right?
Okay.
So when the kundalini goes up above the heart chakra into the throat, into the third eye, into the crown, then it is lighter than the heart, as they were saying. And the feather is actually the serpent itself. That's what that is actually symbolic to. The two aspects of Shu, all right? Shu is known as the personification of air, which is the breath. But the feather was an aspect of Shu, and so is the serpent an aspect of Shu. And Shu is nothing more than Yahshua, as we know later on in the Bible, is Jesus, who said, be ye wise and be gentle as doves, but yet wise as serpents.
You know?
So all of that is correlating to the same thing here.
Okay. Interesting. Now, so ultimately, I like when you said that when you make the transition, the mind, which we've come to think is in the head, is actually in the heart.
The soul itself, what happens is that the soul has left the body, and with it, it is taking the emissions in which that, or the transmissions in which that has been, or as we would say also, emissions in which that has been put upon the heart itself. And the center of the brain is the pineal gland where the soul is embedded at. But the soul has taken all of that with it, so therefore, the heart is a remnant of the physical remnants of that which that was taken by the soul. That's why in the ancient Hermetic beliefs it says the soul is a ba, B-A, but the heart is a what? A-B, which is the opposite.
Right.
So the soul and the heart, the soul and the heart, ab and the ba and the ab is opposite, but yet they're one in the same, in that same sense, you know?
Damn, that's hot.
Yeah,
hot to death. So now, okay. So now the brain, you pointed out, is basically a transmitter and receiver. So when I hear that, I just think of it like as a television or a monitor, and basically you're either receiving information through it or transmitting information out of it. Okay, so I know
the brain is the brain is there in order to take in the rays of the sun and the cosmic energies. That's what it's transmitting.
Okay. All right? Okay.
That's what it's transmitting, and that's what it's absorbing. That's what it's conducting.
Right.
It's the rays of the sun itself. That's what the head is for. That's why oftentimes in those 17th century pictures, you will see a halo around the heads of the holy people, you know. Because the head symbolizes the same as that of the sun. As we broke down, it's no coincidence that the rays of the sun, it takes 8 minutes, you know, the sun being 93 million miles away, it takes 8 minutes and 20 seconds for the sun rays to touch the earth. But it also takes 8 minutes and 20 seconds for the nutrients in the blood to bathe the brain. So that's no coincidence. All of that is based on the fact that we're as above, so below.
Right. Okay. So I know you also talk about things that could be activated in the brain. For instance, medulla oblongata, of course, the pineal. You know, that's where a lot of, you know, that's where I spent a lot of what I do trying to get that area jumping for whatever, to get people at the foundation of whatever they want to do next, but to really get some activity there. So, but you also speak about other aspects in the brain in detail and very eloquently, I might add. And some of those,
right.
Can you share some of those with us, especially the one
right.
about
well,
the new lives and dollars?
Right, right. Well, I was a student also of C. Freeman L., myself
mm-hmm.
and Bobby, during the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And C. Freeman L. taught us that there's three places in which that the soul incarnates at, or three openings or gateways.
Mm-hmm.
One, of course, is the crown, which is the pineal gland. Another one is the medulla oblongata, and another one is the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So as you can see, the play in between those, once again, the pineal gland and the heart again being said there. But like you said, let's focus on the medulla oblongata. So when we look at the medulla oblongata, you're looking at what is called the mouth of God, which is at the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
When you do Kabbalistic teachings, when you study the Kabbalistic
mm-hmm.
writings, in particular the script of Hebrew, the 22 letters, you will see that Q-O-P-H, cup.
Mm-hmm.
And with that is the beginning stages of what's called Golgotha in Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
The word Golgotha in Aramaic means, in English, Mount Calvary, but Golgotha in Aramaic means the place of the skull,
mm-hmm.
which is talking about
mm-hmm.
the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is the place where they say Jesus got crucified at, all right? Is on Mount Calvary or Golgotha, which is the back of the head. Gulp means back of the head, axe. These are the symbols for gulp. Back of the head,
mm-hmm.
skull, axe, and copy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
also monkey. Now, this is no coincidence because when you look up Tahuti, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tahuti symbols is a monkey, which is a baboon. He's a writer of the scribes, in which that he recorded all the good and bad deeds of the gods and goddesses or the Netarus. No coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
In Islam, we say, turn our head to the right. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Turn our head to the left. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. And we're talking to the so-called angels who write down the good and the bad deeds. All of this is symbolic to the fact of your copying something from the you have what is called the cerebellums, and you have the cerebrum. Two
mm-hmm.
cerebellums, two cerebrums, in which that records information, in which that they see that information directly and converge it upon what is called the medulla oblongata, which is the copying
mm-hmm.
center. All right? Now,
mm-hmm.
no coincidence, when you think of a monkey, you think of a saying in which that has been around for years. It says, monkey see, monkey do.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a monkey is known to copy your action. All right? So that's why the monkey became the symbol for Tahuti or the baboon, because Tahuti
mm-hmm.
symbolizes the copying center.
The tribe. Mm-hmm.
Right. And this is all talking about the medulla oblongata. So, no, Tahuti did not physically exist as an ibis-headed bird man, as people would think, and all they can do is just talk about that and, you know, but it's an actual location in our brain, and that is the medulla oblongata.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Where's that located?
What's that?
Oh, well, I just wanted to be clear so people know, because many people
right,
know where it's located.
Is located directly at the back of the head, right up from the spinal column to where the skull is located at. It's like that little hollow
mm-hmm.
area at the back of the head. That's the medulla oblongata. Now,
okay.
When scientists have done research on this area, they found out that the medulla oblongata is known as the place where past lives are located at, and the ability in order
mm-hmm.
to have what is called photographic memory. In the occult, our reincarnations or last incarnations are stored there.
Mm-hmm.
And in Taoism, it's a known fact that if you tap the back of that head 25 times, 3 times a day, you scarify that area, in which that gives you the ability in order to tap into your incarnations, your prior incarnations.
Mm.
So that means that you
wow.
never be alone, because any question that you have will always come through from another soul event, because your soul has gone through millions of years of incarnation. So your soul
mm-hmm.
knows you know, all the answers. So you simply are able to tap into what is called your own personal Akashic records, which is connected to what is called the oversoul within the occult. All right?
And the word
you know, so that particular area is very important for the storage places, you know, of your last incarnations as well as now, consciously, in order to give you photographic memory. So that's needed for a person who's taking tests, who's in school, college, whatever the case is. That area is very important to actually learn about and to do your research on. Right.
And activate. That's because when I seen you teach that in the lecture, sure enough, every night I've been doing that, and sure enough, my dreams, it's been incredibly lucid for the last few nights. So that's some shit I'm going to something I'm going to be incorporating in what I do daily now.
Right.
Real profound revealing when you drop that. Now, you also talked about the Kamites. And if we didn't know any better, see, like, you know, white, if I was just a regular white guy, I would say they were obsessed with the pineal, especially, but us, we know better. We know they were speaking on the importance of the pineal. So while we're here on the brain, could you share some stuff about how the Kamites were presenting the pineal to us, some of the symbolism that they left behind about the importance of the pineal, how to activate it, and how they looked at it in as a whole?
Right. Well, there's many hieroglyphics and hieroglyphs, as well as also what is called metanetas, in which that shows a pine cone sitting on top of their head. And, of course, the word pineal means pine cone. It shows you that at one time the pineal gland actually set up more towards the top of the head area, which that's what we found out, and that is actually what is the soft area, a soft spot on the head of the baby, is actually when the soul comes down into the body and embeds itself inside of the pineal gland. But at one time the pineal gland was about the size of a silver dollar, but it has shrunken now to about the size of a pea, hence the term pea brain. So that is... That is actually that's where it comes from. So by raising the kundalini, you cause the pineal gland to become engulfed with blood, in which that swells it up once again, you know, now to about the size of a dime, to the size of a nickel, the size of a quarter, depending on how strong your meditations are, in which that gets you back to what you know where you once were. Now, there's a technique
back to your right mind.
Back to your right mind. There's a technique called the pranic tube breath, in which that actually there's a tube in which that runs from the top of the head, from that hollow area of what was hollow. You know, of course, by the time you turn 7, you know, your grandmother is telling you, just like my grandma was, sit your little ass, hard-headed ass down somewhere. You know,
shit got rocked.
There was a tube that ran from the top of the head down to the perineum, in which that gave you access to drawing up energy from the earth and at the same time drawing down energy from the cosmos. The pineal gland acted as a step-down transformer for the endocrine gland system. And the energy from the pineal would go to the pituitary gland, from the pituitary gland to the thyroid, parathyroid to the thymus gland to the pancreas, to the spleen, to the adrenal glands, to the man, the prostate, and then the testes, to the woman, the uterus, and ovaries. So the energy comes down into the body, down to each pineal entering gland, and then creating what is called hormonal balance. So this pranic tube breathing was very important in ancient Kemet, and actually it was actually shown on the walls through what is called pi. All right. If you see certain measurements on certain hieroglyphics, they actually would equal pi, which of course is 3.141. You know, as far as the perfect measurements for the pyramids, as well as also the other structures, as well as also the template for the physical body. You know, so Pi is very is a number that you have to pay attention to, as well as also the golden mean ratio, and as well as also the Fibonacci numbers. All of these correlate to certain aspects of your physical body, in particular the structure of your physical body, as well as also the endocrine glands, which is called the chakras, as well as also the frequencies in the cells in which that takes to activate them.
Interesting. Now, okay, so the heart versus the brain, I think we covered that. I'm trying to think, is there anything else on that? I do want to ask one more thing, because I hear in everyone's chakra work, they say the big deal is opening up the heart chakra. And they also, you know, and I've also pointed out that Christ energy, they show the importance of opening up the heart chakra. That's why Jesus is always has this flaming heart, and his one of his hands is always pointing up as if it's pointing up to the higher chakras. I've also pointed out that this reference was in the movie Into the Dragon, when the Bruce Lee told the dude to point to the moon, smacked him in the head. Oh, Bruce Lee pointed to the moon, smacked the guy in the head, and said, if you concentrate on the finger, you're going to miss all the glory of the moon, which is another way of saying if you concentrate on this fake image of Jesus, you're going to miss actually what the symbol is actually saying, which is pointing up. Now, but still, I want you to speak on a little bit of, because even in that image, they're always pointing out, even when you hear chakra work, the importance of opening up the heart chakra. So if there's any symbology, technique, or why would you say this has always been so important? What's the purpose of that?
Well, because the heart symbolizes the merger between the high and the lowest, and everything is concentrated there at the heart. The heart happens to be one of the places, like I said, in which that you can store energy. So that means you can activate the heart by simply breathing. And by concentrating energy there at the heart, and actually you're gonna feel like your chest is expanding, or in the hadith it says Muhammad felt like his chest was being ripped open. You know, that is all allegory. You know, but that's what it actually feels like there's an expansion across your chest,
right.
As the heart chakra is being activated. What that does is just actually give you the ability in order to love, Bob. You know what I'm saying? Love, compassion, mercy. Not to have to do it by thinking about it, but by doing it because it's an expression and because that's how you're feeling. You know, it's the opening of the bridgeway between your feelings.
Because let me tell me if this is valid, because based upon the work, when I felt I was getting to the heart chakra, I think I developed an overall compassion for our plight as a people more than individual, it didn't make me become a nicer guy or sweeter or more docile, but I've seen a bigger picture in terms of I felt more compassion for the soul and who we were and what we should be more than an individual human. You know what I mean? So I always wanted to ask, is that the type of thing we should look for? Because what I noticed when people say, well, you know, if you go, look, I don't like you, your shoes look funny. Oh, your heart chakra's closed would be an answer you would get. But I'm like, in my work, I've never seen nothing that speaks to that as opening the heart chakra. First it becomes self-love, then you feel more compassion for mothers instead of a particular mother, not your particular mother, but you know what I mean?
Right.
If you say, well, I don't like this person, it has nothing to do with your heart chakra. It's just that's your social personality. I guess I'm asking, does that hold true? And why I'm asking, not just for me, for many people, because they may be looking for the wrong thing when they're doing this work. I think that's the
That's what I felt. You know,
okay.
I felt overall you know, a compassion for humanity, you know,
right.
Overall.
Right.
You know, now everybody,
right.
Of course, there's things that I did not like.
Right.
You know,
right.
But
when I,
right,
I didn't feel like,
mm-hmm.
I felt compassion for what humanity has now fell from.
Right.
And the
right.
compassion and love became not only a plight to help them raise that, but I could feel pity in the individual. I feel pity in the
right.
person's ignorance. Because, you know, in the, when
right.
you first get into conscience, they make the separation. Well, we the special ones, and those are the dead niggas out there. And then
mm-hmm.
it became
right.
more of, as I got into more of the hard work, it became like a pity for these so-called dead ones at their potential. So all I became more compassionate for them. But not at the same time ready to raise up ignorance. You get what I'm saying? Or just because
right.
they like Puff Daddy, I'm not going to say, well, my heart is open. I'm going to tell you I like Beyonce and Puff Daddy, too. I'm going to tell you like it is. But
right.
so why I keep bringing this up is because I notice most people think that their work in this is supposed to make them a better human being. So I open my chakras, and my humanity becomes better. I open my heart chakra, and now I help old ladies across the street. Over my heart chakra, now I just work for Greenpeace. But I just wanted to we should be clear, that's not actually opening up your heart chakra. You're actually opening up a gateway. One of the things I noticed, and you can tell me if this is true as well, and I want to get into this in the second part of this question about the lower versus upper chakras. And to maybe set it up, one of the things I noticed is, in my studies, that they call the heart chakra the place of the wounded child. And it occurred to me they're talking about the place of the wounded child because the wounds happen in the lower chakra because that's where you develop your humanity. And really what wasn't granted to you in your humanity. So by the time you get up to being conscious into dealing with the heart chakra, that's where the wounded child has to be released, forgiven. You really have to first develop that compassion for yourself. So I guess that brings us to the second part. I want to ask you about a description of the lower chakras versus the upper chakras then in terms of humanity and then the spiritual part of yourself.
Well, the lower self or the lower chakras are what is known as the four devils. Within the nation of gods and earth, as well as also within the nation of Islam, it's called, you know, there's two selves within the more science temple teaching. It says there's two selves, you know, the higher self and the lower self. Well, it says the lower self, it does everything in which that harms. The higher self is the mother of virtue. Essentially what it's talking about is that the lower chakras have a tendency to have a person relegated as far as the brain usage is to the reptilian portion of the brain and to the limbic portion of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
They never reach into the higher portion of the brain, which would be the neocortex and the frontal lobe. That comes with the chakra going up and, you know, above the throat chakra into the third eye and the crown. And that's the kundalini moving through those particular areas. Now, when the energy of the kundalini is only there within the first four chakras, and at 19.5 degrees, there's an upswelling of energy, and there's no coincidence that the Quran says the number 19 is over, you know, that 19 is over it. That symbolizes, if I took a tetragrammaton, or what is called tetrahedron, the six-pointed star configuration, and overlaid it over the human body and did 19 degrees or so, 19.4.5 degrees, we would see an upswelling of energy, you know, at that particular area. That's the kundalini, you know. So with that upswelling of energy, we understand is that energy being trapped in those four lower chakras have a tendency of a person to exhibit traits or attributes, which is lust, greed, jealousy, and envy. Now, of course, if a person, you know, critique themselves, you know, then admonish themselves and say that they do not, you know, like those traits within themselves and that they need to work on themselves and they actually are sincere about doing so, then you know, they can go into the higher chakras. Now, can you get to the higher chakras without your lower chakras? No. So, you need your lower chakras. But the thing is that you have to learn how to use them positively also. They're known as the devils because oftentimes the majority of people use them negatively, and they only exhibit those negative traits. But they are positive traits for the lower chakras.
Right.
You know, like, for example, the root chakra, yes, is red, and yes, that's the color of the devil, or Uriel, which is Lucifer, and the Kundalini dwells in that abode area. However, negatively, yes, you can have anger, but positively, you can have passion.
Right, right.
You know? So
right.
These chakras have a parallel within themselves or polarity within itself of negative and positive, or magnetic and electrical, or whatever term that we want to say, yin and yang. You know, so it's just the fact that the majority of people on the planet, seemingly, being that they've not taught these spiritual teachings, exhibit those negative qualities of those four lower chakras.
Right.
Right. Because most chakras books you read, you know, I mean, you know, it's pretty much standard information. They'll tell you there's basically three states of your chakras, either underactive, overactive, or balanced, which is what they're trying to go for. So they tell you there's a positive and negative side to, you know, each chakra. And, you know, they tell you things of how to, if you know, and then they'll give you the whole scope of emotions. They actually, well, I'm saying, hey, I'm actually doing that in my book, in one of the chapters, a whole scope of emotions. And if you suffer from any of these emotions, positive or negative, it'll tell you what other colors and deities, scents and things you could do to switch, you know, to either add energy or take energy away from that lower chakra. Then it goes on to say, like, you can have access. Now, tell me if this is wrong, Aleem. You can actually have access to higher chakras, but if you haven't dealt with some of the issues from the lower chakras, those same human problems or the same human, issues will taint what's happening in the higher chakras. Like, for example, if you haven't dealt with the lower chakras, and let's say we're in the solar chakra, where it's about where your self-esteem, let's say, may rest, and you have a problem because everybody in high school used to chase you or bother you. So let's say you read a book about chakras and read a book about how to channel. They say, like, now when you channel, instead of people always tormenting you, it'll be like, well, there's a spirit always after me. There's a spirit. If you don't do that, the spirits are going to get you. The spirits are going to get you. So each reading you read or each thing you get is always the same negative thing that happened in the solar chakra with people. So if you were to get rid of that anxiety, let's just say, and you become pure of heart, when you're dealing with the pineal gland, what you're getting from the spirit world becomes untainted with your personal issue, because you've dealt with or balanced the lower chakras. And I know you talk about uniting upper in Middle Egypt is the symbolism that happened, something like that. So is that true? That's something I was dealing with. And I want to know, based upon your study, how true does that sound?
Oh, that's exactly true, huh? You can have the three higher chakras resonating pretty well as far as when you do a Kirlian photography flash, you know, a picture. But the three or four lower chakras could be, you know, almost double. You know, because like you said, double. they haven't dealt with, you know, in the totality, you know, those attributes which that are exhibited from those particular chakras. In other words, they're operating basically from ego.
Right. Gotcha. You know? From their ego,
so
right, and their personal agenda.
Right, their own personal agenda. Exactly.
Right.
And they're still being controlled by those four devils. You know, and therefore they themselves are actually a devil, even though they assume to be a light being. And this is where it comes from. The scriptures talk about, you know, that even the devil can transform himself into an angel of light. That's what that is talking about.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Wow. Now I get it. So basically, when you come before devils, if you haven't dealt with that, all your so-called spiritual shit that you're dealing with is nothing where we can get that line, the devil is a liar, because it's basically a lie.
Right.
So it's you, it's you just basically, it's your humanity that's actually radiating. It has nothing to do with your true spirituality because you haven't gotten your humanity out the way, really. You haven't, and really getting it out the way doesn't mean ignore it. It really means deal with it, actually. You know what I mean? Deal with it until you get past it. And you know, I explain this in detail in my classes because the detail that's missing, which you can't really do on the radio and on Blog Talk, is when you hear me saying, well, you have to get over your humanity. You got to stop buying into humanity. The actual detail is you actually have to stop buying into your lower self. And again, when I use this phrase, the place of the wounded child, you really taking a self-reflection and saying, okay, I forgive my mama, I forgive my father for either being there or not being there. I forgive all of these people, realizing that they're only human too. So then you create this compassion. You create you see, most people walking around the planet really not even knowing it's from their parents, is mad about their parents or some shit that happened that they did or didn't do that was developed. They think it developed their personality, which is a part of their ego, in the solar chakra. So by the time they get to the heart chakra, they're just raising up their ego. So now this person that was created in solar chakra is in your heart chakra saying, no, I'm a good person. I demand it. You know what I mean? You ever see white people demand and prove how good they are? They're so arrogant at Whole Foods. And they're arrogant when they're like, I recycle. That's because they took what's in their solar chakra, and they're trying to make it something in their heart chakra. I'm a nice motherfucker. I got black friends. You know what I'm saying? What's wrong with you, nigga? I got black friends.
Exactly.
And then if they manage to get to something creative in the throat chakra or something spiritual in the they're not getting out the crown chakra, just like they're not getting past the fucking what do they call it? The Van Allen belt. They're not getting past the quarterback. They're not getting past the fucking crown chakra. But if they manage to get something spiritual, it's more dress up and pretend shit. You know what I'm saying? They start rubbing and humming. But I find black people are doing the same thing. We're mimicking it, and it's actually worse for us because we actually have a claim. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it's easier for us. We have melanin and dreads, and we were here forever, and we built that. And every place you go, you see a black face. So it's easier for us to take our ego and bring it into the heart chakra. So I guess the next question would be, what are things we could do to deal with that? How can, or the best way you think some of us black folks on a personal mission, because you don't have to prove nothing to anybody anywhere on Facebook, but when they're sitting with themselves, what can they do to check to see if it's their ego or if it's if it's their ego, or what can they do to relieve or make themselves aware of it, I would say.
Right. Well, it takes critical thinking as well as also it takes an in-depth emotional search, you know, within yourself, you know, in order to figure out, you know, what is your agenda. You have to ask yourself that. You know, is your agenda for fame, for fortune, you know, whatever the case is. You know, or is your agenda to actually uplift all of humanity? What is the agenda? You know, and these things have to be asked. You know, and so you have to critique yourself. And whenever you find something which that you know is up the lower self, as we would say, then you have to, you know, chastise it and, you know, reverse it or, as we would say, put a positive thought in place of that negative thought. And then you put another positive thought in place of it in order so that that positive thought resonates. It's just like algebra. You know, you got to, you know, a negative and a positive, you know, but in order to, and they canceled it out, but in order to have another, you have to put another positive there so that it can resonate. Otherwise, you're not getting it. You know, it's neutralized. neutralized it.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense because every negative thought, let's even say that I've ever had, you still do ponder the other side of that thought. So, for instance, if I say, well, I know I'm a trip falling down the stairs, then you still say I'm not on a trip, but you balance it out. Like, you put a negative and a positive together. You didn't say, I know I'm not on a trip, and then add something else, like, because I'm a motherfucking genius. You know what I'm saying? So now it's two positives against that negative. You get what I'm saying? It's,
right.
So I give, because every negative thought we can have, we're gonna at least think the opposite. But we don't, more than just thinking the opposite, we need to add one more. You know what I mean? That was real interesting, real profound. Real profound. All right, so it's clear people need to understand more than saying, oh, my chakras are this or my chakras are that. Understanding these areas and understanding each emotion, balance the negative with it, and then do a self-test, a self-reflective thing, like you said, and really deal with the problem.
The technique that I use too, God, in which that is called Reiki, or Reiki, in which you're pulling and going down cosmic energy into your chakras, what happens is that you begin to start seeing glimpses or flashes of the negative things in which that is stored within your chakras. And it's being shown to you because, you know, each of those endocrine glands are actually seats of consciousness. So each one is showing you visually through your mind, you know, what was lodged there, you know, what is there so that you can deal with it.
So Reiki is a technique to help. I didn't want to cut you off, but I was going to ask. So Reiki, you're saying Reiki is a powerful technique for people to get who are interested in self-reflection, so they can figure out some of these things about self, because this is all about know thyself, really. So they can figure out some of these things. You're saying Reiki is that technique,
right?
Exactly. So now,
we're going to talk about
some of the things you do in your classes, and is Reiki one of them? Because we can cut to the chase. The first time you came and stayed with us, you showed me all the Reiki techniques in one sitting and certified me as a Reiki master. Just so you niggas know. But now, so I know it's something that you teach. And so is that one of the things? And I don't want to, because we're going to go into an area of what you do in your class, a breakdown when we get there. And first, let me say this. This is going to be at least two shows. So tune in next week, the same time. We're going to pick it up, same format. I'm going to be questioning Dr. Leem on the second portion of this series. So next week, 8 o'clock, Thursday, same time, we're going to do it again. And we're going to get to a point where we talk about the things you do in your class. So I don't want to give too much away about the Reiki, if it's one of the things that you do in your class. So, but it's interesting that you speak on Reiki as a technique for self-reflection. And I know I cut you off, but you were saying
about the Reiki. Right, I was just saying that's one of the most powerful techniques that I've done as far as in all the science of healing in which that I know, in energy modalities, that's the most powerful as far as being able to reflect and you can see what was the problem in which that was being lodged there as it comes across your mind. You can actually see it. It would take you back to an event to where it began at. This is what it does. So is one of the best for cleansing karma and cleansing attachments.
Now, I was always under the understanding that if you had what they all start emotional, but I was going to say you had an injury of some sort, that someone, a practitioner, would have to do Reiki on you. But if I'm understanding right, you're saying basically you could do it on yourself for the purpose of self-reflection as well?
Yeah, definitely. You don't need anyone to do Reiki on you. That's only doing like a healing session. But a person can actually do Reiki or what is, you know, if anyone watched Karate Kid, they can do what Mr. Miyagi did and rub their hands together real quick. against each other, friction, and that heat produces the chi within the hands, and you can just lay your hands on any part of the body, and until the tingling is gone, you can redo your hands again and then take it to the next part of the body. That within itself is a form of Reiki. You might not necessarily use the symbols, but it is still a form of Reiki and a form of healing. You know, electromagnetic, what do you call it, magnetic healing.
Okay. Interesting. So, yeah, this is real interesting. Real interesting. Now, we're going to probe more into Reiki and all this stuff when we get to the portions, when we get to the things that you teach in your class, the concepts. Okay, I got another question, but before we do the questions, I'm going to get the commercials out of the way. Of course, as you guys know, herb packs for the pineal gland. Shit is working miracles. Email me at panicpack@hotmail.com, or you can start going looking around my website, occultlectures.com, the new hot shit. I'm going to start adding more shit, and I'm eventually going to add all the products up. And we're going to be off and running, but you can email me. My class is going to start in a couple of weeks. If you do not know what my class is, it's a class for beginners as well as experts on basic magic, magic concepts. So if you want to take it to the next level, this is the class to take. And again, you can email the people who have taken my class and ask them how they have benefited from it as opposed to taking just my word for it. And all you have to do is email me to get the prices, very cheap, payment plans and all the rest of that jazz. But now is the time to get in for this class. Also, I talked about it the last time I was on here, my girl Tiffany from Detroit. She took my class, but she was already on some magical shit when she got there. Very deep into the fairy shit. And believe it or not, she makes these fucking fairy slippers that are so fucking magical. I've been rocking with these shits for a few months now. And believe you me, you will go into the next level. And you need to, she sells them. She sells them really pretty much cheap. You need to email her. What you can do is just email me to get her email. So email me at panicpack@hotmail.com or check out occultlectures.com. And that's how you get at me. Also, what you need to do is check out my brother in the struggle, DrElimElBay.com. There you could get everything. First and foremost, he did the smartest thing because he had a store where he sold a bunch of magical, metaphysical items, a bunch of information that you can use. And what he told me when he came here, they just put the store online. So there's a whole heap of shit that you can get from all these supplies. And I know you need them because I get emails damn near every day about someone asking me where can they get this or that. Well, here's where you can get it. You can get it from Dr. Aleem. And if you don't see it on his site, send him an email. He probably still can get a lot of this magical shit that's hard to get. And one of the things that you definitely should get, though, is his chakra package. He has chakra stones. We just did all this talking about chakras. You niggas want to get some help, you need the rocks, the crystals, the gemstones that go with it. He has two versions. He has the one in the bag, and he has the one in the case. He sent me, actually to me and Khadija, the ones in the case, off the chain. And, you know, they're labeled all seven for all seven chakras. Like I said, I do many things with them. One of the things you could do with them, put them in the bathtub. They'll activate that water, help balance out those chakras like you need, do whatever work you need. Any creative way, you can put them in water. But that's what you need. You get that from DrElimElBay.com. So, again, classes. Happening now. Get your asses in gear. The classes have been absolutely fire lately, so now you want to get in. And, of course, not only do I have panic packs, I have a shitload of magical supplies. Baths to clean your auras, different versions of herb packs, all to get in that brain, open up the pineal, and it's on and cracking. If you're serious about your shit, we the people that you need to come to help practice this shit. And that's going to lead me to my next question, because what I notice in my classes, when I give my classes, when I ask questions, people seem to be good, Dr. Aleem, on information, but when it comes to activating the information, that's where we start falling short. When I start asking, well, okay, you know, I ask, priest, well, what are the chakras? vortexes, gateways, wheels of light. I say, okay, but what does that mean and what does it do and how do you activate it? Then I hear a hush. So people have heard all the blog talks, all the YouTubes, all the lectures, so they know how to say and repeat all the information, so much so in a social network, they know how to seem very intelligent. But what I do know and why I know I can ask these questions in my class and why I know we need to deal with this now is because nobody is bridging how to do the practices that actually work and they experience these things. So the next question is for the average person that's just coming into consciousness, what are some of the first physical things they can do so they can start experiencing some of these concepts that they keep hearing about?
Right. Well, I give a good example. I just got back from Houston, Texas a couple of days ago. While I was there, I taught this brother how to do actually, several months ago, I taught this brother how to do the pranic breathing, which is pranic healing breath, which is actually 6363. And he had, at the time, had prostate issues. He was going to the doctor, so forth and so on. And I taught him that breathing technique. Well, that was back in August of last year. This year, you know, and actually this past weekend, he came up to me and said, man, I just want to thank you. He hugged me and everything. He said, man, I've been doing a 6-3 breath. He said, man, I won't have any prostate issues no more and blah, blah, blah. I went back to the doctor. I'm good.
Outstanding.
You know, we know that the breath, you know, has a healing quality to it, you know, and so what happens is that once we learn how to inhale deeply, exhale longer, you tap into different states of consciousness. And then what I discovered is that if you add what is called the inner smile technique, that you smile down into your organs, and then as you're smiling down into your organs, and you add, you know, the movement of the prana or the chi to that particular organ, that promotes the greatest form of healing. This is where you get your miraculous healing from when people are in the hospital, and in particular, you know, with B blood type, you know, they in the hospital, they got this disease in which the doctor is saying they're getting ready to die, but miraculously they heal. You know, that comes from
Oh, no. I just had a question. I don't want to interrupt what you're talking about. It was very good. Two questions, because I'm sure people are asking this. When you say moving energy, how did once they learn the proper, let's say just the standard, the proper inhale to take breath in deep and the proper exhale to release slowly, and they're let's assume they can get this or figure that out, or that's the first step they figured out. How do they go about moving the energy? Are they visualizing it moving? Are they physically moving air in their body? Like this, what would the average person who's never heard that before need to understand from you on how to do that?
Okay. What happens is that energy follows thought. So wherever you put your thought at in your body, for example, if you're having pain in your liver, so you know your liver is on your right side. It's hurting, so you would take your thought, and then as you're smiling down to your organ, to your liver, you're also going to send prana, which is once you inhale, and then as you exhale, you're going to send the warm sensation there also.
Okay. So energy follows
thought. So as you exhale, that warm sensation is going to be lodged into that liver area in order to continue dulling that pain until the symptoms are gone, until, you know, the liver is healed once again.
Okay, so basically, once you take the air and once you just breathe in that context, you're actually pulling prana off the standard oxygen, and then with your thoughts, because as you said, energy follows thought.
You are actually extracting the prana actually from the oxygen. Exactly. The oxygen goes to the cells, but the prana is going to the liver.
Right, becomes a different type of food
right,
a different type of energy than just the standard air that we're used to breathing all day. And so basically with your visualization, your thought, you are ascending with your thoughts to that particular ailing organ, and that's how you're moving the energy or moving the prana or chi to that.
Right.
Excellent. Okay, so now this, so the second portion was, so your recommendation, you would say for the person coming into consciousness, one of the first things he could do to start activating parts of his body is breathing. That would be the first thing you would say they need to do?
Right. Anyone dealing with any type of health issue, that would be the first thing that you would want to work on. And what we noticed that you get the expansion of the auric field when a person practices the 7171 breath technique or the 6363 or what's called the empty retention. Those three particular breaths, what is called pranic healing breath, either one of them three was just practice have a tendency of expanding your auric field from 3 feet to 15 feet around you. So therefore, that type of expansion, the leaks and holes within the auric field, fills in. There's no more leaks and holes. The attachments, which is negative thought forms, so which that process could have been attached or whatever the case is, those particular entities are released. So now you're only dealing with your own energy because that's the whole problem, is that a person's auric field obviously is under 3 feet around them, in which that is causing these holes and leaks, causing the traumatic experience, you know, what is called the dis-ease within the body, because there's negative thoughts that could possibly be attached, or either detrimental thoughts from themselves, in which that, you know, by expanding the auric field helps release all of that negativity and get them back on the road towards recovery and back towards the road of being healing.
Okay. Now, as you can see from the questioning, I'm playing the role of a person who I'm acting as if I never heard this before. So
right.
The six three breath. What would be the 6-3 breath?
Right, you'll breathe in for a count of six, which is 6 seconds. You'll hold it for 3 seconds. You'll breathe out for six seconds, and then you hold it for 3 seconds and start to count over again. The best way is to do 100 of them upon the 100 breath. What I've noticed around the 84, in the 84 and the 100 breath, you'll feel the expansion of your aura instantly. You'll actually feel it with your sense of smell.
Okay.
But that's what it is. You just simply breathe in for 6 seconds, hold it for 3 seconds, breathe out for 6 seconds, and hold it for 3 seconds. That's it. And then just repeat that 100 times.
It
takes about 20 minutes to complete.
Okay. So it takes about 20 minutes to, and basically you breathe in. Are you intaking air for 6 seconds? So you're breathing really slow, and you're pulling it into the belly button.
6 seconds, and you're right. So you're doing the Buddhist breath. So you're breathing in, and your belly is getting big. As you breathe in for the six, you hold it, and then as you exhale for 6 seconds, your belly gets, you know, deflated. And then you hold it for 4 seconds, and you just repeat the cycle over again.
Okay. Okay. Now, see, with something like that, I guess this should work, so I'll recommend it. You tell me if this is wrong. And I recommended this before just to get a metronome. And you know, they have the electronic ones now. And actually people found it online when I recommended it for other meditations. But you can put it on 60 seconds. You know, you can put it where it beats on seconds, and that'll help you keep count. You know what I mean? You know, instead of having to count with your mind, I guess, because I'm sure by now you know how to do it without even counting. I guess, I don't know, you tell me if that's wrong, because, you know, it clicks in that second, so you clap one. Okay, so then I'll recommend that. So now I'm still, now you said that the aura expands. Could you explain what the aura is just for the person who's never heard this? And you did go into a little bit why it's important for it to expand. But what generates the aura? What symbology is the aura? And is there any Bible symbology of the aura?
Right. Well, these the endocrine glands that we talked about earlier, the pineal, the pituitary gland, the thyroid gland, the thymus gland, the spleen, the pancreas, the adrenal glands, the males, the prostate, the testes, the woman, the uterus, and the ovaries. Those are the seven major endocrine glands in the body are what is called ductless glands, which produces hormones. Well, there's lights on which that is superimposed over those particular endocrine glands, which is what we call within the chemistry field, Roy G. Biv, which is the color red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, which is coming from the base chakra, which is red, navel, orange, solar plexus, yellow, heart, green, throat, sky blue, third eye, indigo, crown, violet, white, or gold. So hence you have the rainbow within yourself. This is actually what is meant that Noah received the rainbow as the covenant from God. It's talking about the chakra system. All right. Well, from the chakra system, comes forth what is the movement of your auric field. All right. And your auric field, your lower auric field is about 2 inches above the physical body, which they really call that your ethereal or your etheric body, right? As it expands out more, it expands out to about another foot and a half out, which is your health aura. Then from that to 3 feet outside of you is your outer aura. So you have an outer aura, a health aura, and an inner aura. And those three looks like somewhat of a shell or an egg, as you would say. Because it's like an oval shape over your physical body. There's certain things that you can do in order to make it expand 55 feet outside of you in diameter, and that is called the 18th breath, 24th breath, and 28th breath, what's called Merkaba technique. And the word Merkaba means flame and chariot in Hebrew, which that you find that Elijah was taken up on the flaming chariot to be with God, and that is talking about the Merkaba, So the whole still is that as it is able to change into various geometrical shapes through particular breathing exercises in which that taps to the different things of consciousness. So that's the size of your auric field is light, and light is from the physical body. Generated by way of the water, which you are 75% water. Your brain is water.
Your phone sounds just a little bit muffled, Lane. I want people to hear this.
All right, can you hear me now?
Much better.
You're loud and clear.
All right.
Okay.
What part? Can you hear me now?
Is that the aura? Yes, much clear. Much better. Much
clear.
Better. Much
all right. What part did y'all begin to hear?
I would go back when you started talking about aura as the light field.
All right, so the aura is actually light being emitted and generated by way of, which is also heat. You have your solar plexus, particularly, in which that is your nerve plexus, in which that sits like in the center of your torso. And being that it's called the solar plexus, the word solar means sun, so there's heat in which that is generated by the neurons in which that is being activated within that area. So hence, heat is produced, in which that regulates your temperature of your body to 98.6 degrees. That heat, in mixture with the water, which your body is 75% water, produces steam. And your aura, that steam that is being released, or that light that is being released from your physical body. Let me just put it that way. That's the most simplest way I can get to understand that.
Yeah, to break that down. Okay, now, so even the regular human has experienced this before, where you could be sitting down with your back facing whatever, and you could feel when somebody walks in the room. Or sometimes you could walk in a room and feel somebody was talking about your ass. Or you can feel if there's some grief in the room. Is that, like, when I'm walking the room, am I picking up on that individual's or those individuals' auras when that phenomenon happens?
Right. We go back and watch the movie Fault of War with Wesley Snipes, the first one. He learned to practice what is called psychemistry. He was able to walk into the room and know, based on the astral impressions in which that was left in the room, he was able to detail exactly what took place in that room. That's what all of us, we all have an etheric or astral impression in which that we leave when we touch an item or when we walk into a room or whatever the case is. There's a part of us in which that is left. And anyone who practices the science of psychemistry can actually pick up on those particular frequencies at any given time. The best is would be within an hour or two, is the best impression that you will receive. After that, of course, the energy already begin to start dissipating and dissolving. But if a person can get it within the first hour or two, then they can actually pick up the energies from the individual and be on point about who was in that particular room and actually what took place.
Okay, got you. Based upon them leaving an astral signature.
Right, your astral signature.
Okay, interesting. Okay, I also notice you're one of the best at breaking down the certain hidden powers in the body. You and I had a conversation because each time I hear you talk about it, it brung to mind that TV show from the 80s, Greatest American Hero, where in the story he got this super suit from wherever the fuck, wherever, but he didn't know how to work. He lost the instruction book and didn't know how to work it. So each time I hear you lecture, that always comes to mind because of the way you speak of the body. Like, and I haven't seen you left any part of it out yet. That it's just basically super suit that through time we have lost the instructions on how to basically use it. But it's not really lost because it's in our subconscious minds basically, and it's clear we can tap into it because you have been explaining this shit for quite a long time. So I just would like you to share some of the things in the parts of the body that we can activate, and or is there a system that we can tap into, perhaps you teach or a book that we can tap into that kind of explains these different parts of the body in how we can activate it for spiritual advancement.
Well, we have many books. You know, the Bible is actually a summary of some of that information, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishad, the five books of Buddhism, called the Heart of Ayurveda.
Niggas can't decode that shit on their levels.
Yeah, I know, but I still have to tell them
that you have you are a master of decoding that shit, right?
But all these other books have components of what is actually going on. The Bible itself, if you get past the story about white Jesus, you start to realize what white Jesus is actually saying. I'm only saying white Jesus because that's how everybody
thinks.
Even though the Book of Revelation says that the nigga had hair like lamb's wool and feet of burnt bronze and furnace. And the voice of many waters and red eyes, okay? Eyes like
flesh. That's a nigga if ever there was a nigga. If ever there was a Jesus, he would be a nigga. If he did exist, he would be a nigga.
All you got to do is go watch Good Times.
Right.
The episode where Michael put Jesus on the wall and everything changed.
Black Jesus was making miracles happen. Shit, James was hitting the numbers. All sorts of shit. Thank you, Black Jesus. And I don't even give a fuck if it was Ned DeWino. I don't give a fuck if it was Ned DeWino, nigga. Thank you, Black Jesus. Black Jesus is doing plenty of shit, you know what I'm saying? Plenty of good shit. Yeah, she is. Thank you, Black Jesus. So now you said all of these, basically these holy books that we've come to know, and that, you know, they are filled with symbology. You have to be somebody to be able to read it and understand it. So that's why I said in the beginning that, you know, Brother Leem is one of those who has come back to show us some of our old ancient forms of thinking, understanding, because everybody is not going to get that. You know what I'm saying? Not easy, and you know, you dedicated a big portion of your life at this work. You know what I mean? Because shit, Aleem told me some, like, you know, well, yeah, back when I used to do this shit in 84, I'm like, damn, nigga, like, wait a minute, how old are you? You know what I'm saying? In 84? Nigga, I had a pair of, my whole shit was trying to find a stonewashed suit. You know what I'm saying? High top demons. He's like, and Aleem was like, well, when I was decoding the Quran in 84, and when I was studying this in 87, I'm like, shit, in 87, nigga, I was trying to get rap videos. You know what I'm saying? Somebody emailed me the other day, yo, I seen you in Super Level C's video, nigga, I lost it. I said, yeah, no, I was looking real young. And they used to call me old. You know what I'm saying? They said, damn, I was 8 years old when this shit came out. I was like, I was already grown. And at least shit, in 84, nigga, I was studying this shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, God damn, nigga. So you dedicated, we need to understand that. You're not a newfangled internet phenomenon. You know what I'm saying? Before this shit was even shit that niggas stood around and even wanted to fuck with, you were clearly deep in this shit. So niggas ain't going to read the Quran and be like, oh, shit, they talk about my arms. Niggas going to read the cow and think they talk about a motherfucking cow. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Wow, I didn't know the cow was that divine. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So they're not going, oh, they talk about Hathor. You know what I'm saying? So we got to go slow. You know what I'm saying? You got to go slow.
Right.
Because you're very, you know, you got to remember, you're very advanced, bro. And, you know,
I'm going to name some books in which that will help them, you know, reach these levels a lot quicker than they had for me, because we didn't have the internet. You know, I had to read hundreds and thousands of books, magazines, articles, and pamphlets, and, you know, lectures, watch lectures, and practice, you know. So the internet now, you know, got this whole thing, you know, a whole lot easier for you. So what might have took me 20 years, y'all can learn in two. But the whole thing is this, is that you never say that you think you know everything. Every morning you wake up with the idea and the concept that you know nothing, so that your cup can be filled.
Right.
You know,
so you
that's how you eliminate the ego on a daily basis. It's saying simply, upon awakening, you know nothing. And you're allowing for the answers to God to put you in particular positions, because God is nothing more than your higher self. So you wait for you to put, you know, the physical you to get in tune with the higher self of you, all right, which is God of
Excellent.
You.
I'm glad you said that.
That's what you really, you know, waiting for on a daily basis, you know, and, you know, and
yeah,
so when you read, go ahead, Doc.
Oh, no, I just wanted to interject before we got off the subject. One person said, Panic, you're contradicting yourself. I said, nigga, that's a compliment. You know what I mean? I want to know, I want to be able to talk some shit that's different tomorrow than I did yesterday. That means I learned some shit. You know what I'm saying? Think I'm be going to the grave talking that same shit? You know what I'm saying? I said that shit in 1929, nigga, and I mean it today, goddammit. That ain't going on. You know what I'm saying? No, I hope that's a fucking compliment. You know what I'm saying? Now, you used to say that, now you say this. That means I went somewhere. So you, yes, that's one of the first things you to learn. So I'm so glad you said that. That you come to terms with that you don't know shit. You know what I'm saying? You never walk around this motherfucker talking about you know
Hell
it all
no.
and you're so wise and you're a master teacher and all that kind of shit. Fuck all of that. I don't even want to be none of that shit. I always want to sit in the seat of, thank you very much. That's deep. You know what I mean? Because that means you put yourself in a position, as Aleem said, that to empty your cup. And they tell you all that shit. They showed you all that shit in the Matrix. First, you must unlearn this, and how come your eyes never work because you never used them, and all of these are reference to that exact point. You know what I'm saying? You stop thinking that you know or seeing what you've seen. They're saying you never really used them. You're not doing that. That's not air you're breathing. You get what I'm saying? Stop acting like you know what the fuck you know. Because everybody on Facebook talking about they know what they know. The motherfucking ghouls of the status messages, I'm saying y'all missing a very subtle point. And it's not even what you say in your status message. It's the mere fact that you feel so compelled to keep saying this shit. Which is saying that you don't have time for an empty cup to learn anything new. You're too busy trying to prove what you think you know. I'm glad you said that. That's one of the most important things anybody starting out should understand. That's, and in fact, that is one of the first things I've heard when I got into the conscious community, when I started seeing black folks' faces. Don't ever, ever walk around here acting like you know something. When, you know what I mean? That you may not. So now that that rant's over, I think we lost the chat room. Did y'all lose the chat room, Elaine?
Probably so. It's 10 o'clock, so.
So they might come us off.
But,
yeah, they usually keep the chat room up.
I don't understand how everybody got lost, but.
Yeah, but it's still on the air, so we're still recording, so we're gonna keep going.
Yeah, we're still
unless I don't know, unless I hit some shit. But
yeah, let me give us some books. The Metaphysical Bible Dictionary by Charles Fillmore. Right. That's one of the books in which that help. The esoterically the Four Gospels esoterically interpreted by John P. Scott.
Mm-hmm.
The Apocalypse by what's his name? Actually, is Philotus.
Mm-hmm.
Philotus. Philotus.
Mm-hmm.
Another good one is Hidden Wisdom of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got those from Bobby back in 95.
And, okay, let me make, if we get cut off, let me make this. We will be back next week with part two, and it's going to be more question and answer than we answer questioning Brother Aline. We have a lot to deal with. We have a lot to deal with Jesus and his symbology, because Aline uncovered some things there that I definitely want to talk about. I want to talk about some Bible stories, Noah, Moses, Abraham and Sarah, Joshua blowing his horn. I want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff you talked about with the straw man. So we have some questions and ground to cover if we get cut off. We're going to see how far we can get today. And I'm sure more things will come out of it, but we basically want to cover that. So we'll be back next week, Thursday, 8 o'clock. Join us. Bring your asses. All right. So so we started talking about the symbology in different parts of the body. Can you name some parts of the body that have both, you know, we understand it for its physical meaning, but name some parts of the body that some symbologies and some of those books that you named that people will get an aha moment just to see that it's more than just your lungs or just your heart or just your ribs or whatever.
Right, right. Well, you know the story of Moses, as they say, that he split the Red Sea. And
okay.
I always found that story interesting. And when I came to the conclusion of, you know, the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary by Charles Fillmore, and you start seeing that Moses is an aspect of consciousness, but it actually is an aspect of the heart physically. Then you start to realize, the pumping, the to and fro motion of those four chambers in the heart is what produces the split in the Red Sea, which is your bloodstream. Once I realized that, understand that people was focusing on a story from 4,000 years ago, Moses split in the Red Sea. That's beautiful. But when they realize that the real Red Sea is talking about their own bloodstream and their heart, then they take that to a whole nother perspective. They won't see it as just a story from 4,000 years ago. They'll see it as something in which that is related to them here and now, which happens to them on a regular basis.
Okay, got you. So now, okay, so the name Moses would have to have a symbolic meaning as well.
Right. Within Hebrew, the word Moses means to draw forth. So what does the heart do? The heart draws the blood through the particular, chambers, arteries, in order to, produce that to and fro motion. So, the name Moses itself means to draw forth or to draw from the waters. So water is talking about the waters of life, which is your bloodstream, the plasma. It's no coincidence that saline solution is identical to your plasma, your blood. Matter of fact, at one time, instead of using blood, they used saline solution for blood transfusion.
That's salt water, basically, right?
That's salt water, exactly.
So that's where you would get the Red Sea.
Right, Red Sea.
Okay. All right, so why would they put this symbology there? We know why it would be corrupted, but
right. Remember Moses
is a Sumerian story, right? If I'm correct. So
right.
Would you say the Sumerians were trying to say?
When you look at the Bible, you're looking at a summary of information in which that was taught. Which actually is gathered from off the walls of ancient Egypt. This is why we know that Moses, he was the prince of Egypt. Moses was called the prince of Egypt. He spent, he was in Egypt for 40 years first, and then 40 more years later on, So this whole thing, is showing, like the formation of us within the womb. The 40 years is nothing more than actually the 40 weeks within the woman's womb of the human body being formed and the first organ in which that is formed within the body is the heart and the brain, which symbolizes consciousness. When they speak of Moses, they speak of Moses in that context, not as an actual man by himself or as the only man, but as humanity as a whole. And those flaws in which that humanity has, dealing with moral, moral issues, murder, as Moses is going to be murdered to Egyptians, and because of that, he wasn't able to see, go into, he was in the wilderness, the wilderness or the desert, for 40 years or 40 nights, but he was never able to go into the land of Canaan, or Israel. He was able to go to the top of the mountain and see and look down, but there he died. All that is symbolism, talking about the fact of, like you said earlier, about the heart and its attachments. In other words, if you allow for for your heart to be bogged down by things in which that you have done in life, whether it's murder, whether it's fornication or whatever the case is, if you allow for your heart to be held down like that, then you won't make it.
This is actually interesting. I hate to cut you off because before this loses my mind, Moses couldn't go into the promised land, which you could you pointed out could be the upper chakras, him being the heart chakra. If you remember, the reason was he tapped the rock and water came out, and he said, "Watch what I did," as opposed to "Watch what God did." Which is another way of saying that was his ego. So it's like once you bring that ego into the heart chakra, you can't get into the promised land.
Exactly.
See a whole different thing.
Right.
You see a whole different thing.
And people can verify what I'm talking about by going to the book Hidden Wisdom of the Bible. by Matthew
right.
Fox. And they can mm-hmm. check that book out and see what I'm talking about. Also, Christ Consciousness, there's another book called, I think it's called Christ Consciousness. I can't remember the author right now. But I think
mm-hmm.
Matthew Fox also dealt with that book, too. So,
mm-hmm.
so check these books out, and you'll start seeing a higher revelation of what is actually taking place when you read these stories as compared to the way in which that you've been trained to look at it. You know,
mm-hmm.
especially my Jehovah's Witness friend.
Right. Oh, yeah. Now, okay, so since we're on Moses, and I know we talked about this, we might as well just go to Noah. So can you for us decode what this Noah story is all about?
Yeah. Well, if you're talking about Noah, within the Greek, you find the name Noah to mean nos, which means mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So once again, it's an aspect of consciousness, just like Moses was, so was Noah. And, of course, it rained 40 days and 40 nights. And, of course, we find, once again, just like Moses was in the wood, was in the wilderness for 40 years, and before that 40 years, he was the prince of Egypt. So for 40
mm-hmm.
years, he was the prince of Egypt, and for the other 40 years, he was in the wilderness. So at 40, Jesus also, 40 days, being tempted by the devil, 40 days and 40 nights. So that number 40 uh-huh. always symbolizes spiritual maturity, as well
uh-huh.
as also the firm foundation, dealing with four being the four elements, earth, air, water, and fire, combined to form ether, which is actually zero.
Uh-huh.
So we understand
uh-huh.
that that's symbolic, but you also have the fact that 40 happens to be, once again, the formation of the human body in the womb of the woman. Which is 40 weeks.
Okay.
We are there being formed in the waters of life, which is the amniotic fluid, just like
mm-hmm.
Moses was drawn forth from the water,
right.
which is, i.e., also a form of the sperm being encased in semen, which is the water
uh-huh.
of life. Also, that shows the formation of that sperm and the egg as they combine and go through mitosis in the waters of life.
Mm-hmm.
Noah symbolizes being in that ark. That ark is actually the roundness of that stomach. If you lay a woman down, the only thing you can see is the top rounding portion in which the baby is in, which that's actually the ark itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what is symbolic to Noah. It's no coincidence that it says Adam is made from the dust of the ground, hence symbolic to the earth, which would be the base chakra. Noah is 40 days and 40 nights, rain, water, hence would be symbolic to your navel chakra. And the word navy is derived from the word navel, and the word navy
mm-hmm.
means what? Warfare. So the question is that your belly button is called navy or navel.
Mm-hmm.
Hence
mm-hmm.
your umbilical cord is attached to the mother also for those 40 days and those 40 weeks, in which that you're receiving all your nutrients, vitamins, minerals, your conscious thinking, you're talking to the child, so forth, so on, comes by way of that particular anchor.
Uh-huh.
Just like on the ark, you have an anchor, you had to have some type of mowing apparatus in which that stopped the boat whenever
uh-huh.
It was to come to shore. But it's the same uh-huh. thing with the water breaking. Now the child comes to shore. Now
right.
it's raining. Now here it is. Now it's raining in the 40 weeks or the 40 days or 40 nights.
Mm-hmm.
The rain is now pouring down, and that's the water breaking as the child is now coming to shore.
Mm.
Hence a boat
mm-hmm.
is also called, when a boat is also being birthed. They call it a birth.
Right.
Right. So
right.
All of that is being shown. And then you're being pulled the mold to the dock. And then of course the doctor,
mm-hmm.
Brings the child out the womb.
Exactly.
So Noah being symbolic to the navel chakra. And as you know, as we go over the rest of the, you know, Abraham is the solar plexus, hence he came from the land of Ur, which is the land of fire. Solar means fire, sun. Then David means beloved in Hebrew, which symbolizes the heart.
Hold up, before we go, I have one more question about Noah before we go on. To be absolutely clear, I know what you mean, but I want you to be clear when you say it, because, you know, the biggest thing about Noah, he had to gather two of everything, two animals of everything. So what does that symbolize?
Right. Well, the two animals or the two elements is talking about the two ovaries as well as the two testes. We understand is that the eggs come from the ovaries and the sperm comes from the testes, which is two of everything, as they would say, which is also the lower nature. Is described as your animal nature. Your animal nature. Or your animalistic nature.
Right.
So the two animals, so the animals are coming. Right. So here comes the sperm, which is coming from the two. But of course, you know, there's millions and millions of sperms, so here comes the animals. Or the egg, which the woman, within a lifetime, she generates over a million eggs in a lifetime. But only two eggs are able to become fertilized, you know, over a time span, you know. So here come the, you know, here come these animals, as they would say, onto Noah's ark. In other words, to be produced within the uterus. That's the ark. And that's the ark, as you see, on top of the unk. The ark on top of the unk. You know, which is the source of life, which is the top portion when life takes place at within triple stage darkness, as we said.
Excellent. Okay. So, wow, that was perfect. I'm glad you broke all of that shit down. The niggas should not be struggling with that shit in any context. I damn near want to see the movie Noah now. You know what I'm saying? Me and that motherfucker chant for Noah. That's right. Build that chip, nigga. Build it. We got to get these assholes out of here. These sinning motherfuckers, I know what you mean. Thanks for that breakdown. Now, you started to talk about Abraham and David. So let's get down to Abraham and David, the father of Israel.
Right. Abraham is known as, quote, unquote, the father of many nations. Well, remember, we talked about the nexus of nerves on which that is there, which is at the center of what is called the voluntary and involuntary nervous system. Nexus, those nerves right there at the solar plexus, if hit or punched by a boxer or by a kung fu or karate expert, actually can kill a person or render them dead, if hit there. So Abraham... story goes that he came from the land of Ur, right, which means fire. Ur, U-R means fire within Hebrew and Chaldean. Then they also said that he was Chaldean, and the word Chaldean means demon. Now, symbolic to the fact that you're talking about the four devils. So Abraham becomes part of the four devils, hence, as you say, of humanity, of the human nature, as you would say. So Abraham symbolizing the solar plexus area, you know, and being a father of many, you know, symbolizes those nexus of those nerves in which that produce this so-called fire in which that keeps our body at a 98.6-degree temperature. All right? So Noah Abraham symbolizes that aspect of us. And then, of course, as we move up the chakra, we go to David. David symbolizes the word David within Hebrew means beloved. Well, when you love someone, they'll show you or draw a picture of the heart. So David symbolizes the heart chakra, you know. And, of course, when you read his moral story, just like Aesop's story, you find that David fell in love with Bathsheba. And he wanted Bathsheba so badly that he would actually put her husband on the front line to dead him off so that he can get with her. That's a matter of the heart, once again. But it still, as it showed you, is something negative aspect of the heart, and which that would keep you from being in the highest arena. And how we know that is because it tells you in the Bible that David, because of that action that he did, or because of that act he did by killing Bathsheba's husband on the front, put him on the front line and killing him off where he can get her, he was not able to build the temple of God. Solomon, his son had to, you know, build the temple of God. Okay? David was allowed to. So that's the same way, just like Moses wasn't able to go to
He was at the heart chakra, and the temple temple is technically above the heart chakra. So he was the gateway. It went to his son, which represented the next chakra. Wow, interesting. Exactly. Have you ever did any decoding on Samson and Delilah? That's the cutting off the hair guy.
Right.
What's the physical? What is the metaphysical?
Delilah symbolizes the moon. It's the aspect of the fight between the sun and moon, or day and night. Samson has seven locks of hair, hence symbolic to the seven rays of the sun, or the seven chakras.
Right.
Hence, he gathered his strength. His strength came by way of the sun. Hence, the same thing with Superman and Shazam. You know, when you read about them in the cartoons or in the comic books, you know, Superman is...
And I was saying, I guess it sounds like the origin of Hercules as well.
It's the same story, right? Hercules.
The same story.
Right, that's the Grecian version of Samson. Right, Samson is the biblical. Right, Samson is the biblical story, and you know, and what does that's a good thing, because when you talk about Shazam, you know. Listen to the word Shazam. Shazam is the same as Samson. Shazam.
Right.
Only thing they did was reverse Sam and Son and reversed it. You got Samson.
Right. Like some Sam. Right. Some Sam, which is Shazam. Damn.
Right. Exactly. So.
And these niggas never ended.
So they show you all of this. So Delilah, we know, she cuts the seven locks of Samson, cut his hair, hence cutting his strength, and she sells him out, you know, to the Philistine. His hair begins to grow back. He begins to get his strength back. This is all talking about the battle between night and day, which is the same thing, which is within the
So basically, like, sunset, then as his hair grows back, the sunrise.
Right, Heru and Set. Right, Heru, that's the same thing as the battle between Heru and Set. You know, so it now goes into that story of Samson and Delilah, you know, between the sun and the moon. Right. So that's the science behind them and what is going on with them.
All right, let me ask about let's get to Mighty Whitey, Jesus Christ Almighty.
Right.
We people have talked about the basic symbols, but from your study, talk about some of the symbols in Jesus Christ.
Right. Well, when you look at Jesus, you know that Christ wasn't his last name. You know, Christians might think so, you know, and, you know, many others might think so, too. But the name Jesus, of course, you know, the J didn't come into existence in the 15th century, so his name actually was Yesu or Yasu or Yahshua within the Aramaic, all right? So, or Hebrew, Yahushua or Yahshua, all right? So we find that that name means salvation. Or, oh, he who saves. Now, when you take and find where the word shu originate from, you go back to ancient Kemet, you find that shu was the personification of air. And as the personification of air, it symbolized the breath of life. All right, so Yeshua is the new deity of the New Testament, and only thing they did was put Shu in between the Old Testament deity, which was Yahweh or Yahweh. You would have Yahweh, all right, or Yahweh, and in the Old Testament, but then they put Shu in between Yah and the Way, and hence you get Yahshua in the New Testament. So hence, this is how Jesus becomes the Son of God or becomes God. Because they shown you that in the Old Testament, you only heard about Yahweh. By the New Testament, you hear about Yahshua.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So it's telling you, now, in the Old Testament, Yah symbolizes the higher self. Wah symbolizes the lower self. In the story of ancient Kemet, you had something in which that came along, which was Shu that divided Nut
and
Kemet.
Right.
Before
Shu
came, the scene of Nut and Geb. That's the first thing you see, Nut and Geb.
Right.
That's the Old Testament symbology of Yahweh. All right, symbolic to the higher self and the lower self. As you see, the lower self symbolizes the penis being erected, hence symbolic to the lower self. The higher self, you see the stars embedded inside of the body, hence symbolic to the fact of now collecting enough stardust in order to understand who you actually are, hence the higher self. The next
and
thing
even
you see
Shu.
Now, Right, the next thing you see now is Shu in between Nut and Geb. So now you have the New Testament deity of Yahshua going into the mix now.
Even and what's crazy, if you put it matched up with the chakra system, you have the low and the upper, as you pointed out. But the heart chakra is represented as air,
the middle,
which is in the middle, which is separate. You know, what separates that same air, which is Shu. Again, that's interesting how this all corresponds. Interesting.
Exactly.
See, I was going to just keep going. He was breaking this down. It's real interesting. So you're saying the Yahshua in the next testament, so him is air. Let me ask you about this because there's also Joshua. And remember, Joshua is the dude that blew his horn. When you tell me, I was thinking about this shit later. He's the dude which is connected to you.
And
the wall it came tumbling down. So I guess I'm about to ask, do you have symbolism for the walls of Jericho? Didn't he blow it seven times and all this shit like that?
Right. Of course, the seven times symbolizes the activation of the seven chakras. The same thing that you see within Muslims when they go around the Kaaba, they go around the what, seven times. And then on the last rotation, it kissed the black stone called the Kaaba. Well, it's the same thing with the story of Joshua. It went around the walls of Jericho seven times, symbolic to the activation and the opening of those walls, which is nothing but wheels, those seven wheels. And the horn was talking about how the breath of life is actually utilized in order to activate and open up those particular chakras. That's what that story was about. And how we know, because the word Joshua is nothing more than an English transliteration of the word Yahshua.
Yahshua, right? Right, because it's Joshua. It's basically Joshua. You know what I mean? Wow, interesting. So,
right, and it's no coincidence that we say, nigga, you Joshua.
You Joshua, right. Stop Joshua me, right.
Yeah.
Wow. And basically, that's basically stopped blowing smoke up my ass.
Exactly.
All right. So now, why did the word Christ, as you pointed out, wasn't his last name? How did those two come together to be known as Jesus Christ? What does the Christ mean, and why are they now married to each other?
Shu other name was called Christ. Shu is actually a form of Heru, but his other name is called Koresh, and the word from Koresh came forth Christos, which means to be anointed, and which that became in the from Latin into the English transliteration Christ.
Is that
but
like Harper?
The origin of that is called Koresh, and if you go and look in the book,
Is that Crash connected to Harper Crash?
Yeah, Harper Crotch, right.
Christ.
Which is a form of Heru. That's actually the form
of
Shu.
And you said a form of Shu, a form of Heru. That's what made me think. Is that
right.
referring to the same Christ of Christ?
Right, that's the Christ. And so in ancient times, the anointing would take place with the fat of the crocodile's back. All right, but we understand is that that fat actually is nothing more than DNA being excreted from the pineal gland. That is the fat of Sebek. This is why oftentimes you see Heru standing on top of Sebek, which is the crocodile deity, symbolic to the Kundalini, the power.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where he gets his power from. The soul, the awakened soul, gets its activation by way of the activated Kundalini, which is the reptilian force within each and every one of us.
Now, let me ask you this, Aleem, because, and I know the picture, because you get very few pictures of Harper Crock. The famous one is that stellar where he's standing on Sobek. He has two or four snakes in his hands. But what stands out the most, and I wonder if there's any symbology in this that you've come across, that he doesn't look scared. He looks extremely calm. And almost so calm that the Kamites who were carving this was almost making this point. So have you noticed any symbology with his calmness or any other symbology about his demeanor that makes a statement to you?
Yeah, definitely. You can see that's when he have his finger up to his lip, right?
Yeah, when he's sucking his thumb.
Right, sucking his thumb, right, exactly. So, of course, that symbolizes nurturing. So it's talking about this force nurtures you in the process. Mm-hmm. Even though it's vicious and deadly as it is, it can also nurture you in the same process if you know how to do it properly.
Oh, you know, the Kundalini energy. Right. Fucking, that makes sense because motherfuckers deal with Kundalini. Some motherfuckers get fucked up and some motherfuckers get harnessed it right.
Yes. Right.
So, boom, they're showing you him harnessing right, that's why he has a look of no fear. Because a lot of motherfuckers are scared of it because they don't understand it. Well, if I raise Kundalini, is that going to happen? Is that going to happen? Is I'm going to change?
Yep.
And is that makes fucking clear sense. I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is fucking interesting to me.
That's cool.
You're saying, but it's interesting. Like, if y'all ain't paying attention, this is some profound shit. I can't wait to part two as well. Next week, 8 o'clock, we're going to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Some profound shit. So now, so you're saying that, so basically him raising the Kundalini, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what that is saying. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That particular hieroglyphic letter. Right, that's an excellent scene of Heru, which is, like I said, is a form of Shu. That's no coincidence that Shu also, well, Shu Heru or Heru Shu, also had another name by the name of Isu. Now, when you go to the Holy Quran, Jesus' name is Isa. Now, here it is, Isu, within ancient Kemetic, and here it is within Arabic, Isa. And they tell you that his name is, and that means Jesus within Arabic language. But yet, that name is from Isu, which is the name of Heru. So the Quran is telling you who Jesus actually was and where he went back to, you know, as far as the ancient, you know, Egyptian connection. This is the reason why this is why the Muslims don't understand what they really have, because it actually is telling them to go back to ancient Egypt, but they get caught up into the worship of Muhammad and become Muhammadan.
Right.
They worship Muhammad. You know, what the difference is, you know, La ilaha illallah, wa tuhu ashrikalahu, or Muhammad ar-Rasulallah. They want to talk about Muhammad ar-Rasulallah. Muhammad is, you know, is the prophet, you know, and they want to get caught up in Muhammad. You know, but the whole thing, even any Muslim would tell you that the Quran speaks about Jesus 25 times in there, and that's more than any other person that is spoken of in the Quran. And then it says that, and even though they want to say that Jesus was a prophet, they forget to read the other section where it says Jesus is the Messiah.
Right. Yeah, okay.
You know, and so that takes you back to Misha, and the word Misha, Mashiach, within the Hebrew, also means anointed, but that takes you back to the word Mesu within the ancient Kemetic teachings, in which that is a form of Asar, which means the mummified body, which is Keres. Once again, you know, so the mummified body of Osiris is called the pineal wrapped around the soul, or the soul is embedded inside. That's the swaddling and clothing as Jesus was in as a babe, and then in the sepulchre, as he supposedly passed, he was also wrapped in white linen. All of that is symbolic to the pineal gland. Jesus is symbolic to the soul in that aspect, you know, which is tied, i.e., to the physical body itself. This is why within the Yoruba, you have Ishu Elegba.
That's what I was going to ask, because the name Ishu came out.
The Lord of the Crossroads is talking about your physical body. If you if you stand with your feet together and your hands and your arms out at your side up, it forms a cross. That's Ishu Elegba, you know, Ishu. And so it's no coincidence that you find out that Shu, which is the breath, composes your physical body. Through your insulation and exhalation of the breath is what keeps your physical composition together. Without it, you decompose.
So,
is why Ishu Elegba is known as the trickster, because if you follow the flesh, you get tricked into all types of things, you know what I'm saying, having to get yourself up out of it.
Okay, this is starting to make a lot of sense. Now, this is starting to make a lot of sense. So now, there was something I was just going to ask, like when you were just talking about Ishu, and before you called him the trickster, the separation. The breath separates basically your lower and higher self.
Right.
So if I basically it takes me out of my animal self and brings me into my higher. So something you were saying that makes
that's
that
breath. When we look at the Sphinx or the Himu or Ket, which is the form of the Sphinx, the body is horizontal, which symbolizes the animal nature. All four symbolically, and then the head symbolizes being above the animal nature, just like Jesus on the donkey or the jackass, you know, coming through the gates of Jerusalem, you know, symbolically, you know, or Heru symbolizes you know, the head of a man, but then at the same time, Set symbol was a donkey or a jackass.
Right.
The same concept.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Goes back over and over again.
Now, there's a rare picture, and actually, whose book is it? It's Egyptian Deities from A to Z. I think that's the name of it. I can't remember. I can't remember the author. But in it, he has the picture, and he also has a story called A Tale of Two Brothers. And it's a rare mythology where it shows Horus and Set as brothers. And, you know, it still talks about their mythology, but and then there's also this rare picture where Horus and Set are back-to-back and connected. And that's where you get this phrase in the Bible, devil, get behind me. I heard people say,
get behind me.
Now, get behind me. So there are two brothers in there together. So when I keep seeing now, based upon what I'm hearing from you is, all of these polarities that are together, the breath is the thing that separates them. So the breathing techniques that you've been talking about,
the breath is what merges them, either separates them. Right, that's the mediator.
Okay, better word is balance. Or instead of separate, the better word is balance, I guess.
Right.
Or at least put them in their proper perspective, because you're still going to always need something. While you're here on Earth, you're still going to need your so-called animal self. You're going to have to shop, drive, and do all the other shit.
But
your emotion, like, it's not the center of your emotion. That's the difference. You know what I'm saying? If I'm in Walmart, I'm going to do Walmart shit, but that doesn't encompass my life. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to be like, guess what the fuck happened at Walmart today, Khadija? You know what I'm saying? I don't think that's going to go down. Like, you know, where, let me call my mama and tell her what happened at Walmart. So it seems like when you hear that Christ energy, it keeps coming when, as you correlate it to Shu in the breath, it seems like that Christ energy comes down to a lot of breathing technique to kind of balance out the lower and the upper, and they always and you kind of see a lot of symbology where they show you together, starting with the creation story of Geb and Nut together, and Shu coming in between them to kind of separate it. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
You kind of see this theme going over and over again.
Exactly. The theme is still exactly.
Okay, it seems to be going over and over again. Now, we started to talk about, I don't think we got all into, we got into the definition, but of Christ energy. But on a more practical understanding, now that we know Jesus is the breath and we have the definition of Christ energy, how does the breath and Christ energy come together? Just in a little bit more detail, because basically we're talking about it now. When we talk about the consciousness through the breath, we understand it as a whole. But I guess more detail from you would be appreciated. Still there, Lee?
Yeah, I'm here, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I guess a little bit more detail in terms of what's the how does Christ in the breath, Jesus the breath, and Christ come together as
okay,
Jesus.
Gotcha. Right. Okay. Well, Christ symbolizes consciousness. The anointing of DMT being produced by the pineal gland is what produces, as we know, a psychedelic consciousness. So Christ symbolizes that excretion of melanin from the pineal gland. That's Christ.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
The soul being embedded inside of the pineal gland symbolizes an aspect of Jesus or him rule in that particular sense. And as we know, when you get into occult teachings, we find that Jesus, if you read Kabbalistic teachings, Aleister Crowley, the writings of Aleister Crowley, in there, he speaks about 888 and how geometrically, when you do numerology, it is equivalent to Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you get the Kabbalistic Encyclopedia by Godwin, he also speaks about how 888 is Christ, or in particular Jesus. So we find out that when you go to the periodical chart, just like we did with 666, and find out that it was 6 protons, 6 neutrons, 6 electrons, which is carbon, well, we find out that 888 is another number in which that Kabbalistically it means 8 protons, 8 neutrons, 8 electrons, which is oxygen.
Mm.
So it is telling you that in order to activate the Jesus Christ principle or to tap into higher consciousness or deeper consciousness, whichever way you want to say it, is by way of the breath, which acts as a mediator between the lower and the higher self, or between the resurrection of the Kundalini, which is the mother goddess principle, you know, and her son, which is symbolic to Heru, which is the soul in the pineal gland, hence the Black Madonna and Child, as we would see throughout 200 countries. That's what that's actually symbolic to. And the reason why the Catholics worship Mary and call Mary the mother of God, because that's talking about the Kundalini energy. Just like the Greek speaks about the fact of Sophia being, you know, the mother of God, Ogo, which is Adalabra, later on within the mythology. Ogo actually being the son of Amma, you know, and if you go even further with the you know, mythologies, it takes you, you know, into the Christ story with Nomo being the Christ. You know, so we see that in the Dogon mythology. We see that with the Greek or the Gnostic mythology. We see the same theme over and over again, and it ties right back to the science of breath once again, is that by breathing properly, you produce what is called the awakened Heru, which would be Heru the Elder. When you read about, there's two two forms of Heru. You have Heru Pakrat, and you have Heru Ur. Heru Ur is the Elder. Heru Pakrat is like baby Jesus, as we would say. But that is the baby Jesus symbolic too, being wrapped and swaddled in clothing. That's the soul inside of the pineal gland. It hasn't awakened yet because our set has not awakened or saw to produce you know, this babe. You know,
this babe.
Okay. Amazing, as we would say. But through our set raising herself up, you know, who was wrapped 3.5 times coil at the base of the spine, he awakens our soul, you know, to become the awakened or the awoken consciousness, as we would say, or opener, you know, which is, you know, which is Heru, you know, and after, you know, so many times of mastering those techniques, you produce what's called Heru Ur, which is Heru the Elder, or the Great Light, as they say, which is actually talking about the sun disk around the top of the head or the halo. So that's actually what all of this is coming from, and that comes through the excretion of the DMT and the pinoline within the brain, in which that helps with the formation of this sun disk around the top of the head. And this is how you know that you have actually awoken and you are in the presence of someone who is holy, because you can actually feel in some sense or see that particular aura around the top of their heads.
Okay. So now, what's interesting...
And that's real Christ. And I should say that's real Christ consciousness.
Real Christ consciousness. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, interesting, because you said that truly the Christ is basically melanin. Or DMT in the melanin, which is a spirit molecule in the melanin. Would that be akin to what they call the anointing oil or that crystal oil?
That's the crystals. That's the oil.
Crystals. So yet another
what
code.
Within the code is called crystal.
So yet another code about melanin. That's the one of the things I talk about. Is what I do notice when I, far and wide, when I study occult books, because even though most black people understand melanin is just their skin color, you'll hear all of these codes for melanin. Kia, Bobby actually did a whole lecture, and I think I have it up, on my occult lectures on YouTube, a whole lecture where he went through all the occult aliases for melanin. And he once told me, he was like, white people would get so much further if they just study fucking melanin. You know what I'm saying? They're trying so hard to stay out of saying melanin because it's been attributed to black people based upon us thinking this is our skin color. But so you always have to be on the lookout. That's one you know, correspondence, and if you don't know what correspondence is, you've been listening to almost 3 hours of Aleem doing what we call correspondence. He's taking one story and connecting it to another understanding or another science, corresponding them. And then he's even taken one story and show you how it's layered in 3 and 4 stories. That's the first or one of the first steps you need to be to be a successful conscious decoder. To be a researcher or a studier, you need to be able to correspond these stories to see what the symbology means throughout each story. And when you're able to do that, first of all, the understanding gets smaller, the stories and the work gets smaller, because as soon as you hear a story, you'll be able, for what you don't understand, you'll be able to bridge it to the concept that you do understand. So what is out of your league suddenly becomes in your league based upon the shit that you did study and understand, based upon correspondence. So you must correspond. So when you hear things like anointing oil, you hear Aleem talk about DMT in such detail, those are the things that should be going off as alarms in your head. And sorry about that rant, but I want to also ask to go into a little bit more detail about the periodic table of elements as you did, because one of the things I did notice on the periodic table of elements, the first thing you hear is the 666 thing, that where this devil, this beast comes from, this idea that the devil is 666 is that it's really just corresponds to 6 protons, 6 neutrons, 6 electrons, which make up man. So man is the beast. Now, I said, okay, that makes sense, but maybe, you know, coincidence, which we, I know there's no such thing, but I was basically looking for more. And what I found is that in Dogon and even in Kemet, most of the gods start with AU, Anubis,